KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My name is Mike Hagan. You're listening to Radio Orbit. We'll be back in just a few minutes. To the radio program. It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. And it's a pleasure to be with you all tonight. Big thank you to Debbie Johnson, as always, Free Range Radio Theater, coming to you live 1 hour before this program on KOPN every week. Great stuff, as always. Tonight, I'm not sure what the second piece Debbie did, but the first one was awesome. The Undecided Molecule. How about it? I mean, this is the way the world works, actually. So anyway, great, great stuff from Debbie Johnson, as always. Thank you, Debbie. I love you. And, you know, now I realize tonight, for the first time in some 3 years or whatever of knowing Debbie, get this, we're from the same hometown. Debbie Johnson and me are both from Rockford, Illinois. So that's why we get along so well. You know who else is from Rockford, Illinois? Dr. Michael Heisen. Dr. Heisen's from Rockford, too, believe it or not. And I spoke with Michael this weekend. He had a birthday, believe it or not, just a few days ago. But anyway, happy birthday to Dr. Mike. And hello to Star out there in Hawaii and all the other good folks on the islands that listen to the program, including our wonderful webmaster, Larry Noriger. So at any rate, thank you, Debbie, as always. Good stuff, okay? All right, Kelvin and Jason, before Debbie, they do it up. Jazz plus blues equals spaceship Earth. Tech radio, keeping us up on the amazing world of gadgetry and, you know, technology. Jeff Wheeler starts things off every Monday with Uncommon Light, 3 to 5 p.m. Good music, good talk, good news. Bittersweet Radio on KOPN, your imagination station. Glad to be here with you and a part of it all. Thanks to everybody who joined in with us last week. A wonderful time, as usual, with Kent Stedman from CyberspaceOrbit.com. The Bard will be back again, probably mid-August, I'm guessing, for the birthday show. We'll have a special birthday party show middle of August sometime. But anyway, Kent will be back with us soon, regardless. And if you missed the program, it's all on the web, www.MikeHagan.com. Slip on over to the program archives, and you can download, listen, whatever you like, and share it with those who aren't as lucky as you. All right? Okay, tonight, Bruce Raphael, live from Beijing, China. Bruce was on the program back in April, and there are some new developments that I found interesting, and Bruce thinks are relevant, so he'll be back with us at the top of the hour. To follow up on the material from the last program and to continue with the adventure. Bruce Raphael, you know, this guy really is like a modern-day Indiana Jones of sorts. I mean, he's been all over the world basically pursuing, you know, the quest that he talked about last time he was on the program and that he's going to talk about again tonight. And there are amazing things in China that very few people in the West are aware of, just like there are amazing things all over the planet, apparently, that, you know, that most of us aren't aware of, myself included. And Bruce is bringing us information on some of these things, you know, east of Suez, that, you know, are things that we can put into our information hopper and add them to all the other stuff that we're hearing and learning and seeing and, you know, use it to help construct a worldview. And that's what this is all about, you know. The whole business is about constructing your worldview. How do you construct a worldview? Well, you try to see the world. And one of the things that I try to do here on the program is to bring parts of the world, ideas from other places, men, women, notions that, you know, people aren't familiar with, to help them expand their view of the world. And, you know, hopefully help people. Again, I always include myself when I say help people. I mean, I'm very into helping people, but my God, you got to help yourself first, you know. How can you help anybody else if you're a mess? But at any rate, the building of the worldview is a big part of who you are. And I like to investigate all these interesting people to help myself build my own worldview. And tonight we'll hear Bruce Raphael, and maybe he'll add a little bit to yours, okay? All right, yeah, Bruce, live from Beijing, China. Hopefully we can get all the technology working, get the phones working. I'll do that in about 45 minutes, and we'll have him with us at the toll of the bell at midnight, okay? All right, we'll also feature music of a sweet little rock and roll band I found a couple months ago. San Francisco, California is where they come from. They're called The New Up, and I saw them at the Fugue about 2 months ago, and I take that back. I didn't see them. Ben saw them. And Ben was cool enough to grab a CD for me and gave it to me. And so I dig it, and you guys get a chance to decide if you dig it tonight, all right? That first song we heard was called Arkansas, and the name of the disc from The New Up is called The Palace of Industrial Hope. So we'll hear a few more tunes from that as we move on through the program tonight. We might do that here in just a few, actually. I'll probably play another song for you here in just a couple minutes here. But first, let me tell you that the musicians that I feature on the program, information about them can also be found on the website in the music archives. So if you're into the talk or if you're into the music, whatever, just go over to the website and you can get a load of whatever it is that you need over there. And as I always say, you can find stuff that you like and share it with others and see if they like it too, okay? All right, so let's do that. Let's play another song. Play a quick one here from The New Up, and then we'll be back to Do It Up. All right? Okay, it's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. And Bruce Raphael at the toll of the bell. All right? Right now, The New Up. This one is called, what's this song called? I like it. It's fifth track, but I forget what it's called. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You'll love it. This is called Benny Hinn. It's Mike Hagan. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. All right, there you have it. That's called Benny Hinn. I love it. The new Up, Palace of Industrial Hope. Good music. We'll be hearing more from them throughout the program tonight. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. Mid-Missouri source for lots of good stuff, including music, talk, and lots of good news, bad news, in-between news, news in general. All right. Glad you're with me here tonight. It's about 20 after the hour of 11 p.m. on the 16th of July, 2007. And, well, we got Bruce Raphael coming up in just about 40 minutes or so. I got my brother Bob Bolt just walked into the station here. Glad to have him with us here tonight as well. And all you out there who aren't personally in front of me, I'm glad you're listening, though, and have the radio in front of you or something like that. And I hope you enjoy the program tonight, okay? All right, before we get things going too quickly or get too deeply into it, I guess I should say, let's just say hello to everybody listening this evening on KOPN. Over the traditional airwaves or over the internet, live or otherwise. Every Monday we broadcast a show from the studios here at KOPN, downtown Columbia, Missouri, high above the Dalton Building. And we stream the show live as well on the web at kopn.org. Just go there to the website, click on the Listen Live button. You get a nice 64K stream, and you can join us wherever you are on this blue planet of ours, okay? Thanks to everybody who makes it happen at the station here, live and on the web as well, okay? Speaking of the web, let's say hi to Larry. Larry Noriger, the wonderful web wizard. He's back with us, and I couldn't be more pleased and happy. And thanks as well to all the people out there sending art, music, poetry. I have some new poems. Actually, Bob, you'd appreciate this. I got a couple of great new poems in the last couple of days that I need to put up in the Poets Corner. But great stuff. And, of course, the music. The new Up tonight, great new music that you'll hear tonight. If you like them, you can check them out. And I appreciate it all, so send more, and we'll do what we can with it, okay? Find a place for it on the website, share it with others, whatever we can do. All right, check it out if you like, and let me know what you think. In the meantime, go over to Mike Hagan, HAGAN.com. You'll have access to everything that we're doing over there. So take a look-see and share your thoughts with us. We'd be interested to hear what you think, okay? Speaking of that, there is an active bulletin board forum. It's always busy and lots of interesting topics being discussed over there. Actually, a lot more than I can always stay up with. I go there every day, but it turns out there's always a few things there that I'd like to comment on and others that I maybe would like to comment on less than the others. So I have the time and do what I can, but I should actually... Hey, Bob, can I put your mic on?
Yeah, sure.
What is that? That's number 3. Pull that towards you there.
Yeah.
How's that? Are you there?
I'm here.
There's Bob. The reason I want to turn Bob's mic on because he's one of the... Bob comes and goes. He when he's around, he participates to a very high degree, and he's one of the most valued members, I think, that we have over there at the forum. But he's one of the guys among many other guys and girls that are always posting stories, information, ideas, opinions, and then other people can sort of get in on the talk and, throw the thing back and forth. What do you think, Bob, about what's happening over there on the website?
Well, I kind of go through stages of incubation. What I do is I can't keep a constant stream of stuff going the way you do. I kind of like put it all out there, and then I kind of retreat back into my brain and stew some more things, stories, poems, ideas, essays, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the forum is interesting because it goes through all kinds of different stages. The person I really enjoy most on the forum is Tabby.
Hmm?
She comes up with the most incredible stuff. You know, sometimes
she's remarkable. This is a young
South
lady
Africa.
From South Africa.
Yeah. Her grasp of history and mythology, numerology,
symbology.
Astrology.
Oh
yeah.
My God!
And
if it has an OGY at the end of it, man, Tabby's all over it.
Right. But the forum always has something interesting. I mean, Kent is kind of good because he kind of drops little seeds, like, mm-hmm. And then they sprout, and then he kind of like trims them. You know?
Yeah, he trimmed me really well over the last few years.
Yeah,
actually,
he's kind of the gardener, so to speak.
Yeah, and I deserve some trimming, frankly, from a lot of people out there. So for all of you out there over the last few days, if I haven't been quite myself, you know, thanks for the trimming that I deserved. Okay, and I'll try to grow a little bit straighter in the future here. All right, let's see. Bob, thank you for your opinion. I think it's cool because you're one of the local people that participates in the mm-hmm. forum over there, but there are people from all over the world, literally, that are there sharing their opinions and ideas with us.
It's the best use of the Internet I've seen yet. I mean, because the internet is two stages. It's a way for local people to connect, and it's also a way for people literally on the other side of the globe to connect. Mm-hmm. And I feel mm-hmm. almost the same intimacy I do with, like, Tabby in South Africa or people out in Sedona as I do with people living down the street. Sometimes it's even harder because it's harder for me to get to Columbia sometimes than it is just go surfing on the internet.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting because, you know, like anything else, like any community, like any, you know, group of people in a social situation, whatever, when you first enter into it, you know, you don't know anybody or whatever like that, it's sort of... you know, you have to sort of take a chance, and it's weird because in a digital sense, it's very much like it is in a personal, physical sense. In other words, it's mm-hmm. it's hard to go join a group of people that you don't know in the physical world. It's hard to get in your car and go to a party by yourself when you've been invited, but but you don't know anyone there, you know, and you just have to go and sort of hold your own. Well, in a real sense, it's a lot like that in the forum because you sort of have to go there, take a little bit of effort to join up, and then, you know, sort of jump in the mix. Now, just like at a party that you go to, you don't have to say anything. You can stand in the corner and just sort of observe, and, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. But whenever you decide, when the time is right, you can, you know, go make yourself known. And this is exactly what happens in the forum. We have people that join all the time. You know, Bob, it's funny because they're, you know, I have the administration ability to look at the number of members and all this stuff, and I can see how many members post and how many members don't post, you know what I mean?
Sure.
But I can also see when they were last online. So in other words, I can look at a person and say, well, here's a person that comes online every day but never posts, you know what I mean? And here's somebody who comes online, and it's very interesting because I recognize that there are people out there that just like to look and just like to read and you know, do what they do with it. But regardless, everyone is welcome, whether you want to participate in an active manner or if you want to just sort of, you know, what do we call it? We call it lurk. We call it lurking.
Lurking.
Right? That's the word. That's the internet word I think they use for people who join forums but don't post. They call them lurkers.
You know,
and
so
it's sort of derogatory.
Well, it's really funny. I was raised on McLuhan like years ago.
Oh, man. Marshall McLuhan. Damn, yeah.
And he so much anticipated the idea of the internet, the global village.
You know, I think even like, he would be surprised by what's happened.
Yeah, although it's really strange. I mean, I think it's hard to say whether he anticipated or whether he kind of again planted the seed. I think so many people that are involved, like especially the older people, are really involved in this new technology, this new medium. And I think they see it as something that McLuhan kind of pointed us toward.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Chardin, Teilhard de Chardin,
Another one.
The idea of the noosphere,
mm-hmm.
Incredible anticipation of what was happening.
Really remarkable. And people whose names aren't familiar enough to, you know, a lot of people in not just the West. You know, I've been picking on the West for the last 15 years, but now I'm just picking on everybody. You know, I mean, it's just sort of the same story. But, yeah, Marshall McLuhan, if you've not read him, you know, Understanding Media, of course, one of his books. I think my favorite McLuhan book was The Mechanical Bride. Right? Holy cow.
Right. Well, the interesting thing about his books is that he would always include incredible graphics with it. And The Mechanical Bride, if I remember correctly, was an analysis critique of advertising.
Mm-hmm. And an amazing
the media and its
book.
Impact on consciousness. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, it even went back to Jung in many respects. Jung saw these things even before McLuhan did.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How the ancient, you would say, archetypes expressed themselves in Deanna Doors and Mickey Hargitay. You know, how they became, the movie stars became the new gods and goddesses. So,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm. No question about it. There was one of Carl Jung's anniversaries was recent, whether it was his death or his birth, and whenever that happens, I always end up going back, and I read...
Man and His Symbols.
Oh, man, oh man, amazing. All right, Bob, we'll talk in a minute, okay? Running out of time here in the first hour. I got to get Bruce on the phone in about 15 minutes, but let me say... Well, let me give you my email address, first of all. If you're interested in communicating, orbitradio, orbitradio, @AOL.com. You can do it directly that way. Just send me a note, send me email. If you want to do it indirectly, well, the forum's a great opportunity to do that. Go to the website, click on Community Forum or Radio Orbit Forum, whatever it is, and you can participate that way, get to know some of the other folks that are interested in the stuff we're talking about on the program. And we also have a live chat. a live chat room that's up and active every Monday night when we do the program. Tonight, no different. Hello to everybody over there in the chat room. And a big thank you to Chaos for getting the whole chat thing together and improving it, actually, every week for the last few weeks. And Chaos, I don't expect you to improve it every week, but it is amazing. And it's a much better module than we've been using for the previous X amount of time. So thanks for that, and I hope you all enjoyed it over there. We'll be peeking in there for questions and comments as we move through the program tonight. I always encourage my guests as well as listeners to join us in the chat and the forum. It's a great way to get to, you know, find like-minded individuals and kindred spirits. And you can do it at MikeHagan.com. All right, upcoming guest tonight, as I said, Bruce Raphael with an update from China. We're going to reschedule John Perkins, who was originally going to be on the program tonight. John, of course, is the author of Confessions of an Economic Hitman. And he's got a new book out. I forget the title of it. It's sitting on my nightstand, but I don't remember what the name of it is. But it's along those same lines. And, man, you know, some people say, you know, in fact, this is a discussion that's been going on in the forum over the last few days involving Kent and myself and a bunch of other people. But one of the things that's come up in this particular thread is, well, you know, people that do on the edge radio or journalism or websites, or people who are pushing the buttons of other people that don't want their buttons pushed, and people that are making trouble or rocking the boat or making waves or whatever these metaphors are for, you know, people who just sort of don't particularly toe the line, why are they still here? Why are they still breathing? Why are they still, you know, kicking? A guy like Kent Stedman, who has pushed, trust me, I mean, he has pushed harder than anyone I've ever interviewed. All right. You may not know this, and he may not talk about it on the air, but he's pushing real time. You know, I mean, he pushes against the people that nobody pushes against, and he knows them all too. This is the thing: is that Kent has been all around. He has friends in all of the intelligence agencies. He has friends in Washington and Maryland. He has friends at Edwards Air Force Base in California. I mean, I could just go on and on. He knows all kinds of people. In fact, and they will take his phone calls. You see, he's not just some schmuck. I don't think anybody really is a schmuck, but he's a schmuck that's not recognized as one. In other words, people will actually pay attention to him. People that, you know, that a lot of people in our culture would say are important people.
He knows where the bodies are buried.
Yeah, he knows a whole lot of stuff. I mean, he really does. He's got a lot of old friends, you know, that have been involved in all kinds of things. Everything from, you know, the whole Cambodian business and Vietnam that supposedly never happened, and all the human radiation experiments that were done in the 40s and 50s and 60s that Kent was actually a part of. And one of the reasons that Kent actually took off on his quest to find out some of these things was because he has a congenital defect in his right arm. And he wondered what the hell happened to him. And it turns out that his mother was irradiated while he was in utero. And this all came out, believe it or not, during the administration of Bill Clinton. One of the few good things that Bill Clinton ever did, I thought, was release the Atrex research and all of that paperwork. There's some 15,000 pages. A lot of it was heavily redacted, but there's a lot of it that wasn't. And anyway, if you're interested in seeing what, you know, governments of the world are capable of doing to their own citizenry, including the U.S. of A., you know, just go type H-R-E-X into your little search engine there and set aside a few hours, okay, and have the toilet seat up. Anyway, Kent Stedman is still alive, all right, and he's still doing it up. And there are a whole lot of other people that are doing it too. So the question is why, right? If everybody's so under control, you know, if the New World Order is literally, you know, on your doorstep and controlling everything everybody does, well, how come they're not on my doorstep? How come they're not controlling what I do? They might be listening. They might be looking. They might even come and take a peek. But you know what? I don't give a shit. They can do whatever they want. They can't touch me, obviously, because you know what? If they could, they would. Because these people don't wait around. They don't mess around. If there's a troublemaker, they take care of the troublemaker, right? Well, Kent's still around. He's one of many troublemakers that I know. He taught me how to make trouble. So my answer is it's the spirit. It has something to do with something else. Something, someone, someplace, somehow is taking care of us. You know, call it whatever you want, but that's what I call it. And this was one thing that came up on the forum over the last few days. We were trying to discuss this whole, the thread was actually called Western Civilization is a Slave Society. Well, I mean, show me one that isn't on this earth right now. You'll probably have to go deep into a forest. And maybe that's the place to go, you know, or bring the forest back here to the city. I don't know, something like that. But at any rate, there's lots going on. There's a lot of people that are all bent out of shape, you know, on all sides of many different coins. But the simple fact of the matter is, as far as I'm concerned, you know, first of all, nobody knows what's going on. And second of all, nobody's really controlling what goes on. You know, they might be controlling it to a certain extent, but not everything. No way, no how. No way. And if you can't control the small stuff, you can't control the big stuff. That's the big lie. That's the big illusion that's trying to be peddled. That's what they're praying to God they can sell to everyone. You know, they're praying to God that you buy into that magic trick, that they actually do have control. The nebulous they, whoever they may be. Bob, what do you got to say?
Yeah, if they really were in control, things would be a lot peaceful, a lot more peaceful.
Sure.
I mean, the reason things are so violent and chaotic right now is the fact that people who really do have control don't have to use force.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they mm-hmm. use very subtle coercion. Mm-hmm. But the reason there's so much force going down now is that they do feel they are losing control.
That's a very good point. And I think that's sort of my position. I mean, I'm not Pollyanna-ish about what's going on. I recognize the dangerous gangs and, you know, people that are out there doing their things, but they've been doing it for a long, long time. The fact of the matter is that now we're learning about it. There's not much different going on today than what's going on a couple, 300-400 years ago, even 1,000 years ago, maybe. The fact of the matter now, though, is that there's an information, a flood of information that is giving people different ideas about all these different things. And whether the information is even correct or not isn't really even the point. The point is that there's so much new information that's flooding into people's minds and consciousness that they realize that perhaps what they thought was really going on really isn't. And I think that's the case. And I think that we're approaching a time of pluralism that's probably hasn't been approached since the time of, you know, the Greek city-state or something like that, maybe. I think Plato would be cheering right now, you know, and I think that McLuhan probably would be too, right. Because they, I think, would see through the magic trick. They would see through the standard line of government and control that always tells you that they've got it all worked out and that you have nothing to worry about and you have no one to be concerned about and you just have to listen to the party line and row along with the boat, you know. But I don't think that's the case. I think these days you can hop off in your own boat and they got nothing to say about it. They got too many troubles on their own boat. I mean, these guys are in deep, deep trouble. I don't care what anybody says. I don't care what the Wall Street Journal says. Which, you know, speaking of the Wall Street Journal, they just got bought by Rupert Murdoch, if you didn't hear that. All right? So the Dow Jones just got bought by an individual. Okay? So you want to put your money there? I mean, you want to put your trust in the information that comes out of this sort of an engine? Well, you know, that's your own prerogative. Go for it. Right? It's like going to Vegas and putting your money on a particular square on the crap table. You know, you're welcome to put your money there on Mr. Murdoch and the, you know, the status quo and Western post-industrial consumer capitalism. Put your money there if you like, right? Don't be surprised if you lose it. But put it there if you like. But there are also other places to put it too. And if you're interested in the other places, well, you know, listen to this program. Go to see Kent Stedman, who's still alive and will be for some time if I had anything to say about it, which I don't. But I think he's going to be alive anyway because there are a lot of people that like Kent Stedman and he's got a great heart. So anyway, I wasn't planning on doing this. I wanted to do space weather and all this stuff. It started out with John Perkins, right, and the economic hitman story. Because these people have been doing things that nobody is aware of, Bob, or very few people, right? You know enough about this.
Right.
I mean, if people really knew what the agencies of the U.S. government were doing, and have been doing since, I don't know, 1777. You know, it wasn't all roses back then. You know, the founders and all this business, they weren't all brilliant, wonderful men. You know, they were a bunch of jackasses for the most part. They had some good ideas, and they helped us move forward, maybe. But don't look at them and set them on a pedestal as if they're these wonderful, perfect people. They weren't. They did a whole bunch of bad, bad, nasty stuff. You know, and there's been a legacy of horrific events and involvements of the United States of America. This whole idea that, you know, the U.S. has never done any wrong and Americans this and wonderful, and, you know, I'm an American, all right, and I work for the government too. You know, I don't need anyone to tell me that I'm un-American, I'm not a patriot or this or that bullshit. You know what? I work for DOD. I work for the Department of Defense, all right, in Europe. In 1989, 1990, when all of Europe was changing and the Germanies were coming back together and falling apart at the same time, Eastern Europe was in absolute chaos. The Soviet Union was falling apart. And guess what? I got to read a whole lot of stuff. And guess what it taught me? In one sentence, it's that everything I thought was true was a lie. Everything. Everything that my parents taught me, essentially, except for the fact that they loved me, was a lie. Why was it a lie? Well, because they thought it was the truth. My parents didn't teach me lies on purpose. They taught me lies because they'd been lied to. And either they didn't have the time or the gumption to figure it out. Well, I figured it out. And, you know, I'm trying to help others, you know, see some of this stuff too. And that's just the fact of the matter. It's not, this is not opinion. If your opinion differs with what I'm saying, it's because you, my friends, aren't clear on what's happening. And that's the fact of the matter too. So, you know, as I mentioned before I came on the air to a good friend of mine before I came over here, the first foremost rule of life, as it was taught to me by my grandfathers, is that the world works in circles. And the first circle is you. And guess what? You better get your own circle straight. You have to know what's happening inside your own circle before you can do anything outside of it. And guess what? The great, great majority of us don't know our own circle. We go out to everybody else's circle and tell them what's wrong with theirs. But this is not the way. The way is to look at your own circle, get your own circle straight, and then try to expand the circle. And then bring other people into the circle. But you can't bring people into your circle that are going to do you and them good if you're not clear about yourself. You might bring somebody into your circle that's going to ruin your circle. Turn it into a square. So, anyway, I'm not sure what started this. Poor John Perkins. Wait till he's on the air, my God. Anyway, John Perkins will be on the air sometime later this year, probably in the fall. In the meantime, Bruce Raphael will step in, and it's perfect timing, actually, because Bruce has some stuff that's actually relevant that's happening tonight, and we'll speak with him in just a few minutes, okay? The 23rd, Marco Roden will be back on the program. That's probably 95% Mark will be back on next week. If not, we'll do something between me and you. And the 30th, the wonderful Dr. John Sheliak, back on the program. New info on the time wave and lots of other stuff we'll speak with Dr. Sheliak about, okay? Bruce Lipton, I'm working on getting Bruce Lipton on the show. John Major Jenkins back sometime end of summer. Talked to Dennis yesterday, Dennis McKenna. Dennis actually didn't go to Peru. I thought he was going to be at the third annual conference on shamanism in Iquitos, but it turns out that he's not. He's actually back in Vancouver, and we spoke a little bit this weekend. So anyway, Dennis McKenna, Dr. Dennis, doing fine, and he'll be back on the program in the fall. And, well, you know, we'll just fill in between now and then, but lots of good stuff as always. And I'll try to keep bringing you interesting and fun people to share their ideas with us, okay? All right, in the meantime, let's hear another song here from The New Up, and I'll get on the phone to Beijing, China. Let's see if I can pick a long one here. What's this one? This one is, you know, I'm going to do Space Weather when I come back, too. So instead of that, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. That's all. Yeah, this is a good setup for Space Weather. This is the new up. The name of the disc is called Palace of Industrial Hope. And this song is called Chewbacca's Garden. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. Back in just a few. up. All right, good stuff. That was a song called Chewbacca's Garden. Got a couple minutes to take care of space weather. Wanted to spend some time on this tonight, but, well, just go outside tonight, tomorrow night. If you were out when the sun went down tonight, you'd have seen a beautiful little crescent moon and Venus, Saturn, and Regulus all forming sort of a triangle with the crescent moon on the inside. Beautiful sight. You'll see something like that tomorrow as well. So take a look at the sun, or take a look at the moon, I should say, around sunset tomorrow, and some of the other stars and planets that are up there dancing around with her. It's beautiful stuff. Weekend auroras on Saturday night, big time auroras, and even around middle latitudes in Wisconsin. Amazing imagery being taken by lots of photographers out there. Take a look at all this stuff up at spaceweather.com. You can also always catch up on what's happening in the skies above your heads over there at Kent Stedman's site, cyberspaceorbit.com. And lots of treats in the sky if you want to just turn your gaze upward, okay? More stuff happening in space weather, but I don't have time to talk about it here because there's something else important that I want to do before we bring Bruce on the air. Well, I should mention Paul LaViolette. I talked about Paul last week. He has a new web page that's been added to his site discussing evidence against the expanding universe hypothesis. And I use the word hypothesis because that's what it is. And Paul LaViolette, in many, many books over the last 25 years and lots of amazing research that he's done, argues pretty convincingly, in my opinion, against that particular model. At any rate, if you want to check it out yourself, go to his website. It's etheric, etheric.com. And, check it out for yourself and see what you think of it. But Paul LaViolette, brilliant astrophysicist, systems theorist, and a guy who's been around for a long time and knows a whole lot about the way the world works, in my opinion. So, anyway, thanks, Paul, for getting a hold of me and letting me know about the new information you got up there, okay? Last thing before we get to Bruce Raphael, I'd like to make a quick announcement here. My grandfather Wallace Black Elk, Grandpa Wallace, Wambly Chikala, born July 18th, 1921. He went by the name Wallace Black Elk. That was his, Wallace was his given name, Black Elk from his family name. But in Lakota tradition, his name was Wambly Chikala. And Wambly Chikala means little eagle. And there was a wonderful story in Grandfather Wallace's past about why he received the name Little Eagle. But anyway, to my grandfather, Wambly Chikala, born July 18th, 1921. I love you, Grandfather. Thank you for everything that you've taught me. Thank you for everything that you've given to me. I'd like to read a little piece of something really quickly here that Grandfather Wallace said a long time ago, but hopefully, other people will repeat it and it won't get lost. So, anyway, it goes like this. All things you've done for him, all good things, all things you've done for others, you'll be rewarded for what you did. And Tunkashala will have mercy on you and resurrect you from the dead, and that robe he will save. He will clean your robe, like a clean robe, and put it back on you. That will be your reward. And there will be no more death, no more pain, no more growing old, no more sickness. There won't be anybody there to collect rent, nothing. The joy and happiness will be with you forever. We're not here to change the world or to conquer the whole world. We're here to conquer ourselves, to help each other so that we may live forever. So let's cut this out. No more of this. My way, your way, their way. So the love is here, but we'll add more love towards it. So I think we should share that towards other people. Not here, not today, but the remaining of our time. People will see this tomorrow, and they will hear. Damn straight, Grandfather. I love you. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. Back in just a few minutes with the amazing Bruce Raphael.
You're listening to Radio Orbit with Mike Hagan on KOPN 89.5 FM.
All right, his name is Bruce Raphael. He's an amazing man. He's been on the program before. For the last 10 years at least, he's been following a science that he calls cosmogenesis. And he's been all around the world tracking down this amazing mystery that has led him now to the archaeological ruins of China. And we're speaking with Bruce Raphael live from Beijing tonight, as we did on April 23rd, earlier this year. If you hadn't heard that program, you might check it out after the fact tonight to get a little bit more background, but we're going to follow up on that and move into some more amazing territory with Bruce Raphael. So let's get right to it and say welcome back, Bruce, to Radio Orbit. Hi.
Hi. Ni hao ma, Mike.
Ni hao ma.
Yeah, ni hao ma. It's nice to be back after these several months. I first would like to thank the support of your listeners and Ken Stedman at Cyberspace Orbit, and you, Mike, for making room for this positive educational experience. It's really an important time to have sort of targeted this date, so
yes.
Whatever we talk about tonight should be very important to you.
Yeah, and I think I'll say right off the bat that it is now the 17th of July here in the States, and it's already the 17th there in China, has been for 12 or 13 hours, right, Bruce?
Yeah, and this discussion, which will I'm sure we'll cover a few topics, deals with, you know, our genetic sensory experience in times like this where, you know, we've reached a special Stargate, a term I usually don't use, but it's actually very appropriate now based on all the material that I've sort of contributed called the Lionsgate Cosmology.
Mm-hmm.
Now, unusual as it is to be in China and to see lions everywhere with their little cub at their paw, this followed very nicely in my study. Archaeologically, we're mining the skies now. You know, I set up a blog at GLP to sort of get my hands wet with whatever people really want to deal with when you're sort of baptizing the spirit. And this is what this moment is. This is a tripwire. I promise everyone by tomorrow and the end of the week, everyone's going to feel a lot different. I can't explain why, but last night at around midnight, a very strong, almost targeted beam of, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, came right into my heart. And it was before I went to bed. And I was preparing for it, but I didn't know what it would feel like. So I believe that whatever it is that we can create tonight in this discussion, I'm hoping that it's, you know, a story that we all benefit from, and not just intellectually. You know.
Well, let's do it, Bruce. And I'll just say as an aside, you know, this year, 2007, is only about half over, and I've had a tremendous intuition in my own life and in my own world that this year is somehow, I won't say special or remarkable, but it is something like that. In other words, to me, it seems like it is a pivotal time right now, and I have a tremendous amount of anticipation, both sort of fearful and very positive, just because I don't know what's going on, you know. But for the rest of this year, I think it is a very, very interesting time.
Well, let's get down to some, I mean, in terms of old business, I know in my last radio show, as I listened through and saw, I was very keen to bring out the, you know, the sort of master cosmic blueprint called the Dendera Zodiac,
which is
very arcane and very hard to understand. I've sort of absorbed myself into it for 10 years. So cosmogenesis has become the sort of regulatory method for me to gauge synchronicity, or as some internet people call synchro mysticism, you know.
Bruce,
you want to go to real...
Mm-hmm. Before we get too deeply into the Dendera, tell people what cosmogenesis is, just what the word means.
Right. In the, I mean, we still have to refer to source of where humans walked in time to understand why they're here and how they participated in a cosmology. You know, when you mention La Violette, he's a cosmologist, actually. He's, you know, this is an astronomer. But real cosmology today is sort of segmented into, you know, lot of dot-coms. You know? And then you have provincial cosmologists like who live in Sedona, or you have intellectual cosmologists who are at the universities.
Right, right.
But all in all, this period of time of the last 2,000 years, the true sources, and I mean the true universe, the one verse that connected a lot of these idioms, were torn apart, and they were just given a lot of names and book titles, and they were bound together and sold. And that is called the way of Seth, or the seven animal. So today, you know, when you try to understand what cosmogenesis is, or the original roots of wisdom or ancient terms for being guided properly through our life as a humanity, it doesn't look good. I don't think we're really on the right path. So when we think of Egyptian cosmology, you know, that was a well-scripted social media experience. Nothing like we have today, which is like television and some other things. Cosmogenesis was designed to help those at the top of the social pyramid to know what they had to do to be in balance with this one verse. So cosmogenesis became sort of a ancient craft using language and math. There was a lot of mathematics because they had to know the placement of planetary positions. And this astrology, call it what you will, was more of a science than it is today. Today it's very scientific, but I still find difficulty drawing connection to, you know, the houses, for example. Yet in cosmogenesis, the storyline is to bring meaning and connectivity into a whole mainline group of humanity and their behavior. So it's not always about the individual, which it is more of today, right?
Right.
So they were able to predict the rational instincts of the masses, right? So it wasn't necessarily to control, but to keep balance, you know, between the upper and lower realms. That was their world order then, you know, set by an original priesthood who probably obtained it from the group before in their new world order. So each time it's gotten passed down, cosmogenesis itself or the birth of how our resources are used keeps getting lost in this place. So right now it's strictly just in, you know, segments. But back then it was in a certain much more tautological, you know, when you look at the Dendro zodiac, it's a circle, right? As a lot of the ancient cultures used, right? The Mayans, they had the sun disk, right? So the use of a wheel and stone and icons and images somehow was the way in which the last priest, before they shut the door on the age of Aries, set up this zodiac, right? It was like a computer memory chip. It would have a lot of information. And how that connects to today is most profound, you know. How it came about was just having enough wherewithal to persist with all the information over 7 years. So if you haven't read the cosmological story, you know, in the Lionsgate cosmology, you only need to know that everybody who participates in cosmogenesis eventually realizes that it's about cosmic intent.
Bruce, let me give out the website real fast here because I want people to take an opportunity to take a look at the Dendro itself. Because
it's easy to read, good color panels, and I think it would help.
Yeah, okay. So what you do, everybody, is one of two things. Either go to my site at mikehagan.com and just scroll down a little bit. You'll be able to click on the link that's connected to Bruce Raphael's name there right on the front page. Or if you have Kent Stedman's site bookmarked, cyberspaceorbit.com, just zip on over to Cyberspace Orbit, and there's a link right at the top of Kent's page that says The Lionsgate Cosmology, and that's where you'll go, and you can follow right along with us tonight. But one of the first things, at least the first image that's on that particular page, is a figure of the Dendera zodiac, which is a circular zodiac. And this is the thing that, that Bruce is sort of referring to right now.
Right. Now, just to get your bearing here, just so you know, the target center, which you could just imagine, is a place in the Milky Way. Okay? It's a place sort of that is like a compass point that for us will represent a sort of placement of importance. It doesn't mean it's actually the top of the galaxy. You know, the top of the galaxy is at the Coma Berenices. But for the point of view of this little, you know, lupus, if you know, there's also a chart below, which will make it very easy to follow eventually. There's a compass point, which is this sort of wooden stick thing. And it's basically there to guide the mathematics and, you know, through time. And the reason why we're talking today about July 17th is that the alignment passes through Leo. And this alignment and the conjunction of Saturn and the Moon and Venus, which took place in a period of time over the last 4 days.
Yeah, I blew it. I was gonna spend some more time on space weather tonight because of some of these interesting things that are happening in the sky, but I figure, well, I'll read about my grandfather Wallace and then you can bring us up to speed on all the celestial activity.
What is so uncanny as you read through the story is that I, you know, more or less trespassed through July 17th religiously of sorts for the last 7 years, and the doorway began in 2000.
On the same day, right? July 17th, 2000 was...
Yeah, July 2000 was the sort of the opening statement. It was like the prologue for anybody who can understand cosmogenesis, and at that time I was only maybe 5 years into it. But I had a phone, and I could call my mentor and say, you know, look at this. So, you know, he would throw the screen up and go, oh, my God, this is great. You know, we'll work on that.
Who's
so,
that you're talking
about? Year after year.
Who's your mentor?
Rush Allen.
Rush, of course. Thanks to Rush for his help. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Well, beyond that, you know, he is in the backfield now like a real coach because... You know, I'm not a neophyte, you know what I'm saying? I'm not a neophyte anymore. I'm on the battle line of truthful consciousness, if you want to call it that.
Mm-hmm.
What this means is that it's very easy to get lumbered down by a lot of anxiety and words that deal with who's who in the playing field. The who's who I'm talking about is really ourselves against this scenario, not against the New World Order scenario. What we're talking about today is where the ancient Egyptologists identified the beast and how Revelations took that and encoded it into Revelations 9-11.
In the Christian tradition,
from there, pre-Christian, I mean, I don't know if it's...
But you're referring to Revelation as in Revelation of the New Testament.
That's right, and it was their ability as inspired, I guess... cosmologists of their own time to encode what they were taught and learned wherever they did. I don't know, maybe through Jesus himself,
mm-hmm.
how their words in Greek or Aramaic would suffice to get this ancient story across, right? Just across time.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was known that for 2,000 years up to today, the truth of the cosmologists would be basically nailed to the Tree of Life. So it means that the New World Order then decided to leave the precession clock nailed or focused on the vernal equinox, you know, of March 25th.
Mm-hmm.
In over 2,000 years, as you know, the precession and the movement of stars keeps changing the actual alignment, sort of, if you're familiar with Hindu astrology. Hindu astrology honors the Sathic calendars, and so it gives it a little bit more accuracy of defining this cosmology,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But we're not talking about, you know, Vedic astrology today, but as Rush has found, there's many crossover points between Vedic and Egyptian. So obviously, to me, they were on to the truthful patterns of responsible mechanisms to keep people in line with the times. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So the recipes for balance could be dictated on many levels as the zodiac explores. But the beast is the most important thing because this is all everyone focuses on. What is this number six? What is the beast? You know, what are we honoring and what are we dishonoring by not understanding it?
Mm-hmm.
So this is where we begin. So when you look at this beautiful picture of the zodiac, you need just for the next few minutes, realized that they had it fixed at a place in the stars that would enable people back then to know that there is a place of power, right, that is mysterious and requires great responsibility. And when you look at these two little creatures, when it says here 666 years, right,
mm-hmm.
that 666 years is not actually the beast. That's actually a measure count that defines the distance between the two staves, right? So you have a priest, number 63 on the 63 on the left, and 39 on the right.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yes, yes. One has an orange head, and the other has a green head, if you're looking at the same image.
That's right. Actually, I'll bring this up on my screen so I could define. I mean,
yeah,
using
it's basically,
the colors.
If for people who are looking at the image, if you want to know exactly where we're looking, if you're looking at a clock, it would be at about 3:30. Just between the 3 and the 4, you'll see two images that are nearly identical. One has the number 53 on it, the other has the number 39. The word Venus is in between them, and one has an orange-colored head and the other a green. Okay, go ahead, Bruce.
Right. Now, at this time, when you realize that the beast is placed on top of a youth sitting on a lotus, sucking his thumb, it's obviously not something where it's for privileged, you know, children in, you know, prep schools. This is something that deals with the whole brigade of children growing up inside a culture having to deal with this impending responsibility.
Bruce, let me ask you a question about this particular image. Again, it's a child perched upon a lotus, and why is that significant?
Well, it's significant here is that to get off the lotus and become a man, right, is the whole focus of today's experience, actually. It deals with to become part of the divine nature of man's responsible life, right? Deals with the story of self-esteem. And today, July 17th, focuses on this whole sort of educational basics that the cosmology of Egypt would work with all people, you know,
mm-hmm.
you know, from workers up to the scholars, that they have to understand where they fit in one lifetime. And with enough people fitting in together as humanity in one lifetime, the big responsibility pushes it up to the top of the pyramid, and they're dealing with this image of a beast, right? But actually, this is not the beast itself. In the visceral, you know, the way the Egyptologists did, they used science of elements, like the Chinese did, you know, the five elements.
Mm-hmm.
And they chose...
Most people only know four. What's the fifth?
Well, the fifth would be cognition and inspiration, right? Sort of spirit, right? So
mm-hmm.
we're dealing with the fire of the mind, right?
Okay.
But, okay,
mm-hmm.
now, just for now, you have two forms of the beast, right? You have the beast as it's a measure of time, right? You know, you're born, you live, and you die. But then, within our life cycle, we have cognitive memory that is designed, as we know now, by DNA. Right? The Egyptians were very clever to use the baboon, which if you spin around, I think it's a green ape sitting on a little boat, right? Which gives it the power of an element, of an emotional element.
Okay.
Right? You sort of see that? It's, let me see, well, it's more or less at the... It's at 11 o'clock.
Yeah, 11 o'clock, and it has the number 4 on the outside of the circle just below it, or above it, I guess, if you were looking at it.
Well, yeah, it's upside down. The when you go to the baboon, or the ape, the way it's, you know, described is cognitive experience recalled through one's DNA. So that gives one a chance to reunite with the past, right, so that you could proceed with the future.
Right.
Now, doesn't that sound a little familiar? How is this world going to move on to the future if we're facing any stumbling blocks of DNA manipulation, right,
mm-hmm.
and all the gag-worthy demons of the stuff that this new world order we're living in is placing upon us?
Mm-hmm.
So what it was back then is not the way it is now. But as you know, the New World Order then turned from Egypt to Rome. And you know what Rome became?
I sure do.
Sort of a conglomerate of Grecian things, but it was policed, it was piloted by a police agenda. Sound familiar? You know, it's, we're moving in that sort of prison planet-ish scenario even back then.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, with the proximity of Jesus and his entourage representing the Nazarenes, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about the growth out of this beast, this sort of questionable power. If you look on the Denver Zodiac, you've got the two fish, right? And notice the two fish form of a V, which is the Pisces constellation, right?
Okay, and
if I had more time, I could have. Right.
Yeah, and for people who are looking at the Dendera here, if you look now at about, well, in between the two, where you'd find the number two and three on your clock, head in that direction, you'll see a brown fish with the number 10 on it and a yellow fish not too far from that.
Right. This is very close to the actual placement of the world tree, okay, for now. Let's just say for right now it's actual placement of the world tree.
What do you mean by the
world
placement
tree,
of the world? The placement of the world tree on this particular calendar, or?
That's right. So people try to figure when they hear about the world tree, they go, you know, what is it? It's the tree of life, and like, but the cosmologists back then had it carefully positioned at this place, right, in this little region. For example, you know, when we're talking about knowing your way around the stars, you have to know bottom from up. So the bottom is where the beast sort of presents itself. Below that is Sculptor, or Geb, right? And he's in the stars representing a laying down man with a stave, which is not necessarily shown here as such, but in Cosmogenesis at Salome.net, I think, or .com, Rush Allen's site defines these positions as, you know, like asterisms very carefully so that you can start to know your way around. Okay, that's the whole experience. In the first couple of years with this cosmogenesis, you have to know your way around and get familiar with all these characters. It's sort of like a cartoon. But it's no different than any kind of series out of Hollywood. These characters remain consistent. They're there above you and below you all the time. So, you know, we're not talking about anything but icons that enable, right, that enable human consciousness to grow and to learn something. So in this particular case here, today, right, we are trying to associate how Regulus, right, the 9/11 discussion in Revelations, that the position of the star Regulus, right, over us today, now. You know,
yeah,
right now,
yeah. In fact,
July 17th.
Yeah, if you looked up tonight, you'd see it. It was Regulus, Saturn, and Venus creating a triangle right around the crescent moon tonight.
Right. So now it's only important that you sort of read down to find out who and what Regulus really represented cosmologically, not so much just as a dumb star inside, you know, the cluster of stars for one constellation. Back as far back as Nebuchadnezzar and whatever, this star represented a more or less tripwire for time. Tripwire. I mean, when you cross that, you're crossing into no man's land. You know, you're not too sure what's going to happen next. So
I like it,
John. Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can. I mean, I can feel it, but you know, I've been on this thing for so long.
Hey, man, I feel it too, Bruce. Trust me, man. I don't know what I feel, but I feel something. Trust me.
Right. So we're going to get to this fire, the grid. You know, this takes a little time, but I want the listeners to sort of appreciate two things. One, that the beast is sort of a almost DNA-constructed mystery, right? You can experience it individually. You can experience it collectively. If you're at the top of the pyramid, like, you know, the Bush administration, you're dealing with the behemoth, which is the beast. And when you see the two fish connected to number 39, right, and you look at the, you know, you read number 39, it says Sculptor. Ah, wouldn't you know it? Bottom of the galaxy, right? The lioness. Now get this. Its mythological meanings is associated with Venus, sensitivity, dominion, right? and it deals with the House of Sculptor. So, you know, they were into yin and yang. It wasn't just, you know, one master of the bottom of the world. But when we think of the Star Regulus, if you read Revelations 9:11, which if I can find, it's in the article there, I know by heart, what it does say is that it was given the name of Apollyon, right, or Abaddon. Now, Apollyon and Abaddon have a very sort of, they have a many layers of meaning. But for right now, we need to understand that this particular star, in its name, was the capstone to the bottomless pit. Okay? You know, it is the capstone. It is the seal, it's the door to the bottomless pit. So when people in the, who study, you know, Greek mythology know about Abaddon, know about Apollyon or Abaddon, it's called the destroyer. Well, actually, that's misrepresented. The Greeks always had a tendency to over-exaggerate some things based on their attachment to the physical senses. But in the Egyptian sense and in the earlier sense, it was still a time marker, right? Human beings would cross through this and have to behave if they were leaders in the way they were meant to. And Nebuchadnezzar, who was very much not unlike Saddam Hussein, led Persia, right? And on the map here, you see the number 561, right?
Where's that?
Minus 561. That's a time, okay? It's a time.
Yeah, I see it right at the bottom, basically, of the zodiac.
Right, you'll see 561. Now, when you measure 561, right, to the tune of today's date, which is very, you know, 1996, 2007, whereas, you know, we're going to get a measure of time, right, on this circular scale that I should say Rush Allen carefully measured to define the precessionary harmonic. Okay, so today, right, is very close to what all ancient cosmologists would know as the crossing of a precessionary memory. Right, it's in our genes. I mean, it's been going on for thousands of years, so it has to be there. It's just that we've never recognized it as such. Now, when you cross this period of time, it deals with heart consciousness, and it also deals with self-esteem, right? And so, from the human point of view, if you're giving over, you know, to religious behavior, and you want to do something that deals with higher mind evolution, and not just things of the lower world, you are actually working to force divine intent into your life, meaning it takes discipline, right? It takes sacrifice. Right? So today, you look at the GLP, and there's a war out there. You know, what are we firing up here? What are we afraid of? You know, are we firing something up here? I mean, is this real or is it imaginary? Well, who knows what they did, you know, the last time this came around. But my guess is that it's filled with ritual and it is filled with, you know, modification, right? The only thing the cosmologists warned about this date is that that they needed to be careful not to force divine intent to be their personal desire, right? That would mean that, like America, for example, America representing a new world supposedly for the future has not really gained the kingdom of heaven. I don't know if you've ever heard about that, but theologists were always talking about America is going to be the place for the kingdom of heaven to be shown, right? But it doesn't look that way because the beast and the dark side of sorts seems to be working to knock the self-esteem out, right? And the balance of this product of self-esteem in the world is really, I think it's going to be the measure of whether we succeed or fail in the next few years, you know, on this plane. So what I'm saying is that if self-esteem becomes pure fantasy, it's because we've sent out too many messages that we should protect life and not go to war, you know, and not develop, you know, this ability to protect ourselves. And then the opposite is no. You know, the leading heart liberals fight the compassionate conservatives, just as they did in the Senate during the times of Rome before, you know, a police state was basically set up. So the same thing is occurring here. We're divided today in a statement of belief, okay? Whether we believe what we're, you know, what we're, we think we're made of, or do we believe what others tell us we're made of? So this is the hard part, because the beast actually is a complex notion that, you know, white becomes black and black becomes white, and now we're sort of lost without any kind of navigator, you know, to take the ship into the harbor.
Right.
So that's why today is so exciting, because, you know, if you give the power to the beast, right, you have an emotional loss within your genetic capacity, right, to honor the great house of wisdom, right? If you don't give power to the beast, you know, you are actually getting your feelings straight so that you will walk on water, so to speak. Walking on water was, you know, it's a very interesting thing that the beast calculated number was 6, not 666. It's the sixth position. If you read through the article, Rush Allen explains carefully that it's the sixth position that gives the beast, you know, baboon, right,
mm-hmm.
his power. And that power is the number 6. If you get to Star of David stuff and hexagons and grids, and just put that aside a second, okay, because that gets very complicated. But for right now, the early cosmologists focused on very simple math so that they knew where people stood in their development. So, you know, if you look at the chart, moving from, you know, cognitive abilities onward, you are moving, you know, you're taking your emotions, getting them square, right, and then moving on. You know, we've listened to a lot of great, you know, public prayer from Native Americans and other great, you know, writers, but the real term is that people have to be very honest with what's going on here. You follow what I'm saying?
I do.
Yeah. So,
all right, look.
Well, we can get, yeah.
And I think we should take a break, Bruce, okay?
Mm.
Is it time, or do you want to wrap something up before we take one?
Well, the only thing you have to know is that when we're dealing with the way in which we see ourselves, it's been established that it's not just one thing. You know, the beast seems to have a place of sort of geopolitical power, but also the beast has something in the deep, right into the center of the cosmos,
mm-hmm.
which is again bringing you back to the core. So that's what the DZ, the Denver Zodiac, is doing. You know, step by step. It's, you know, it's like going, I'm giving you a college education when we haven't gone to nursery school yet, but I think the public feels something today. So we're going to do it on another level.
All right, okay? Well, we'll continue in just a few minutes, all right?
Right.
All right, hang on just a second, Bruce. All right, everybody, it's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. Back in just a minute with Bruce Raphael. In the meantime, this is The New Up. The song is called Learning to Crawl. Back in just a few minutes, and we'll talk to you then.
Enough time to bleed.
up. All right, everybody, that one was called Learning to Crawl. And that's what we're doing tonight, actually, I think. We're learning to crawl, and we got Bruce Raphael on the line with us live from Beijing, China, returning to the program tonight and helping us to understand some very, very interesting and strange material that he's been studying for many, many years now. Bruce, you still with us there?
Yeah, I'm here with you. Thank you.
All right, great. Thank you for coming back. Let's pick up where we left off before the break.
We were talking about how Egyptian cosmology actually was a very complete science that guided a whole social order from its DNA understanding all the way up to, you know,
government hierarchies and all that sort of thing, right?
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And today, because it's a significant date, and we're reaching the tripwire of the star Regulus, which is a processionary master star, we need to sort of just for tonight, just look at the zodiac and realize that there are familiar places on here that we know of. It's just that they positioned it in a sort of cartoon style, but.
Bruce, when we're looking at, pardon me, and people out there, there's a little bit of a delay between me and China here, so if it sounds like we're talking over each other once in a while, it's just, you know, it's just the way it is right now. But Bruce, when I look at the zodiac, the Dendera zodiac that you have on the page, is that the way it looked back then, or has it been adjusted or shifted for our benefit now in 2007?
No, it's exactly like this. Obviously, without the numbers. All the design it is, it's just been, you know, when you make a study of it and create a synthesis, Rush had to break down all the parts into color dynamics so that we can at least, you know, use color and thought to sort of make associations.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So when the alignments, when these lines that you see pass through, notice they pass through a variety of stations.
Right, different images, different objects, yeah.
Right, they're different colors. It's like
one
overlaps another into another. It's like putting a needle with a string through a variety of cognitive problems or emotional considerations, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or huge cosmological questions, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah,
so
yeah, that's a great metaphor,
left off,
yeah.
Right? So where we left off is that we need to know where we are today. And for just right now, it's not so much a linear thing. For example, sure, we're talking about the beast, but I've been saving up the fact that if you go to number 49, you see Leo, right, the lion, on top of Hydra, the serpent, who actually is a twin-headed serpent.
Let's see, I'm trying to find it. Where is it? Ah, yes,
it's located. It's located off
7 o'clock
center,
or so. Off center at about 8-ish. 7, 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Right. Now, at this time right now, we need to just focus on two things. That metaphorically, here we've got the line which represents the Cancer-Leo boundary. And that's sort of where I left off in the last show.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Cancer-Leo boundary defines facing reality. Somehow the Egyptians made sure that was clear as day. That, you know, you're not going to get a society anywhere if we can't face reality. Right? That's why they were around for so long. You know?
Let me ask you just a quick question
about how
do we determine that's what they meant by it? In other words, Leo standing on the Hydra, how do we know that this represented the Leo Cancer boundary, and how do we know what the Leo Cancer boundary meant to them?
Right. We're still talking about avenues within the domain of the stars and then sort of exit points. I imagine that there is some sort of dynamics here that we will explore once we get past this. We have to get into the more university-grade study of this stuff. But for this point right now, human position in acquiring knowledge and being a person of truth, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Let's put it this way. Let the Truth Be Known, which I use as a title for the book, is based on a secret work of celestial hierarchies that honored man's role in creation. So they chose this particular position, right, because it dealt with creation and destruction, right? Here you've got, you know, Cancer, Leo, and the other beasts. If you look at just the article, Rush was good, if you scroll down, Rush was good to put the actual astronomical pictures of where, you know, the Cancer Leo boundary is and what it's like.
If you actually looked up into the sky.
Go to the bottom.
Right.
Yeah, go down to the bottom, and you will know that each creature on the zodiac, you know, the zoological lineup, mm-hmm. speaks, and they speak out. So if you click on, let's go back, if you click on, well, anyway, you can see it's right there. I have to go to the site. I don't have it listed on my chart here, but it's the one that shows the I will, which is lion, right? And I feel, which is Cancer, all sort of lined up in a big cluster.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me get on to the let me get online here, and I'll find it for us. Okay.
Mm-hmm. There's a.
Do you follow me?
If we're looking at the same place, I see Cancer,
right. And I want
the lion,
to answer
the Hydra. What's that little critter between Cancer and Leo? It has the number 50 right next to it.
Yeah, hold on, go down. And there it is. Okay, so the little critter, 59? Oh, 50? What is that number? I think it's a.
Is it 56 maybe?
Sorry, Coronis. Leo Minor, right. This is the little prince, and this is actually what we're talking about. Notice the little prince, which is symbolic of, well, Leo Minor, but it is our self-identity, taking on the role of facing the crab, right? But you can see the double intention. You know, facing the crab is facing one's feelings, right? And in order to manifest truth, at this time, today, the whole Lionsgate thing is that you have to get your feelings on straight to move on, right?
Mm-hmm.
You follow me, sort of thing. You know, you can't be confused. You can't be lying to yourself. You've got to have
the
ability to empower oneself.
You have to know yourself. You have to know yourself. In other words, right?
Well, that's right. This is sort of what the Greeks had. Transpose what with, you know, physician, know thyself.
Mm-hmm.
This is the same thing. To heal oneself and to move on into this, I think, greater glory, you're going to have to get past this phase. And this little region here, which is the most distorted portion, actually, of the zodiac, it's complicated, is right out of Revelations 13, number 2. And the beast, which I saw, was like a leopard, you know, which is the leopard. And his feet were at the feet of the bear, which is, of course, Ursa, which is nearby, mouth of the lion, and the dragon gave him his power, which is the Hydra, right, calling it a dragon, a two-headed dragon. And that's the authority. So we're dealing with the authority of will, right? And here in this cosmology, all we're dealing, to keep, I guess, keep it simple for today, is that they wanted everyone to know that at this point in the zodiac is the gateway in which you enter, you know, a life of reality.
Mm. Truth.
You see, no delusion, strict clarity of thought. And you have, I think, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Gives power in the seat, the feelings. And part of the interesting thing about the zodiac here on the outer part of the Dendro zodiac is that Cancer, the picture of Cancer, was missing. So there, in a way, it would be 11, you know, 11 houses. And you could gather why, because when you enter into this house, you have to put your feelings, you've heard that expression, you have to hang your hat at the door?
Yeah.
Right? Well, yeah. The Egyptians knew the same thing. How are you going to get into the higher realms of knowing why we're here if you don't set your feelings straight? So
right, and if you think
they
you already
reminded
know it all.
You, that's right, you don't know it all. So you have to be prepared to put something aside and make a sacrifice. So we're at the stage now where, you know, in this world we have a great deal of psychodramatics going on where people are trying to know their feelings. Well, this is part good and part bad. I'm not too sure if it's working, but it is part of the mainstream form that Egyptian cosmology focused in. I'm sure they had some form of therapy this way. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, now let's go back to July 17th, like today. We're looking at a very complicated notion that when whole social order, I mean a planetary, so the whole planet, right, goes through this particular point in time, it has to, it is ruled by sort of one of the characters here, number 34, Sekhmet.
And
Sekhmet is the one who's...
And Bruce, this is literally because of a movement in space, right? In other words, we are literally crossing a boundary, a border.
That's right.
Okay.
Now... But the only reason I mentioned Sekhmet is because she has an arrow, you know, and we have to aim high. You know, the symbol of aiming high is that we're not joking around here. You know, our lives are at stake and we want a good life. So, you know, what are we as a people, right? And if we're a people of this form of belief, what are we collectively going to create, right, that can be used to open up our universe, right? Some people say, you know, the science of the stars and satellites and all that. Well, maybe that's not the only way,
mm-hmm.
right? Because people ask me, says, oh, isn't this just so, you know, so difficult and so complicated? Do you have to go through all this to really, you know, move into the higher realms? Well, if you can digest this into simpler modes, on a day-to-day level, something happens. And you start to, I think, some of these icons seem to work for you, maybe. Maybe it's a form of therapy.
Mm-hmm.
But in the star science, that's a different story. You know, when you read through Rush Allen's site, it is a very in-depth, almost collegiate-style presentation. So, you know, you have to walk before, you have to crawl before you walk. So right now, today, you know, is where we actually, if you want to put it this way, many of us are returning from the cave of Hades. You know, we're returning from our state of fear.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, Fire the Grid and Shelley Yates's experience, you know, represents our feminine side after 2,000 years returning from darkness. Simple as that. Rush, first thing he teaches is that the whole, more or less, image in the Bible of the... woman clothed in the sun being chased into the wilderness by a dragon.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Familiar with that part?
Yeah, I do.
It deals with something called a flight of Isis. The Egyptians knew it. They knew that they were fighting the Assyrian, you know, the Asiatics for some time, ideologically. You know,
mm-hmm.
The Persians are very. This whole root of Islam in Persia deals with a very, very clever genetic group, right? Who can fight a war. Not only physically, but also, you know, if they go into Egypt, they're going to make a conquering just in that, you know, 20-year period. They want to take out priests and, you know, good looks and, you know, clever merchants, mix it in with their group, change it, and then send it back, you know? It's sort of like what the Chinese do.
Right.
Or the Japanese do, right?
Yeah,
they
did
it back then with, right, with thinking. They did it with thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know... What we're dealing with right now is we're crossing into the most complicated position that you can imagine. We're coming out of the dark. And the flight of Isis represents the native feminine divine wisdom that was chased away and replaced by, you know, the papal thing, the Roman legion, the whole
male dominance hierarchy, the whole business, yeah.
Right. People argue that it never happened. That's not true.
Mm-hmm.
We know it's not true.
Right.
You know, the death, the loss of the of Demeter and the, you know, the goddess of
mm-hmm.
the harvest and all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This all was taken down and turned into a financial format for husbandry.
Right, right. A real estate operation, essentially.
Yeah, and that has not stopped. It's been full tilt, you know, until we have, you know, Trump Towers and all. So, you get my point.
Yeah, I heard Rupert Murdoch just bought the Wall Street Journal. Bought
yeah,
Dow Jones.
Exactly.
Literally, bought Dow Jones. Rupert Murdoch now owns Dow Jones. There you go.
You know, that's why it excelled the last few days. It went over the top.
Yeah.
This exciting leader. Right?
Yeah. Some might call him
a leader picking. Right. So now back to this again. Right. Mm-hmm. We have to realize that the Sethians, right, the skull and crossbone men, the pirates, or the Cosa Nostra, whatever you want to call them, they have taken full control of part of the treasure. Right? So the question is, what treasure are we going to seek? Sort of like, oh, brother, wherefore art thou, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Not seek the treasure. Because does it exist anymore, you know? This is the hard part.
Mm-hmm.
When you come alive to this, you know, your instincts are to survive, so you want to, you know, take a good handful of dirt and turn it into gold. That may not be the exact message being sent today at this particular processionary period. It means that you go that direction, you're certain to go down the road of perdition. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Take the other path, you're going to leave behind this anxiety, and you're going to start to acquire a new form. Right? A new form of self-control of your senses, a new form of who you must be. Right?
Okay.
And this, yeah, this great term I just throw out there deals with what the Egyptians called the Shemsu Hor. They were the followers of Horus, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this whole story is to rekindle, I don't want to say it, but it's to rekindle a lost science, but also a lost group that held firmly onto this and wouldn't let go. Right? They just would not let go until they were killed off.
Hmm.
Right? Or they went underground.
Right.
Right. So now, our current scientists, you know, Laval and all the other great anthropologists and writers, you know, understand some of the bits, right? But they're not actually, you know, standing and say, follow me. They're just saying that here's some of the science of the ancients.
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
the job of this date. It's sort of pushing me and my senses to describe very carefully the mosaic, right, that is literally coming down into imagery through my cortex, right,
mm-hmm.
filled with a lot of stuff. So, you know, right now, we've gone from the zodiac, we're facing realities, who the beasts are, what was a beast when it comes to, you know, your genetic code and manipulating that. And also, once it's rekindled and reassessed, you should be able to experience the same light of divinity that Jesus had done in the first coming.
Hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
And this could be what the New World Order does not want to happen. You know? This is probably another side trick of, you know, having extermination camps in the past, is to get rid of certain souls that were here to do this job.
Interesting.
Right?
Yeah.
It's a very important thing to do at risk of anything. Right?
Yeah, it's the whole deal, yeah.
Right? So,
I mean, if we're here for a purpose.
That's right. This is not an illusion. You know, it's the real commotion of emotion that moved out of 2,000 plus years of DNA stored memory. So, as you think, so you become. Working on this will activate it. Right? Taking time to, you know, the next 6 hours when that I don't know, pre-assessed doorway opens, a whole group of people will participate in something that, you know, how do we say, is nothing to fear, even though everyone is saying it's satellite-driven, you know, it's run by, you know, space aliens. I don't know. I really think that's really not important right
what,
now.
This is the whole fire the grid idea or whatever?
That's right.
But now, why don't you give people a brief idea of what that is before we go to break here?
Right. If you've never heard of it, all you have to imagine is listening to what I'm saying and then seeing that, like everything, something comes out of Hollywood. You know, one emissary, which is Shelley Yates, right?
Right.
And she rises out from the dead after being in the prolonged state of death, and which gave her enough time and her son to definitely be in Hades, which is, you know, the cave of absence, the cave of darkness, in the dark rift below the Milky Way, if you want to call it, you know, the Duat.
Mm.
And in that area, there is a huge swimming bunch of creatures, you know, and I mean the kind of creatures in the stars, of which the beast is one of them, right? And the beast it could be a black hole for all we know, but it's in the constellation of Cetus, right? Cetus, the whale.
Okay.
Right? And if you impose cetus on top of the two characters, you know, with the wood Venus in between, we were saying?
Yes, yes, I see.
Get it?
Uh-huh.
That would represent a good doorway to the duat. Okay? Doorway to the duat, which is duat, duat, you know, it's down. The darkness, it's the abyss. But in that area, the ancients believed that this was the area to get control of, because this is where gods are made. If you succeed and you pull this off, you control everything. And that's where New World Orders come out of. They come out of this area. Okay?
An individual or a group? In other words, this is the business of an individual pulling it off.
No, I would say this is where, you know, what do they say? Gods are made, not born?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's it. I don't know if gods are born, not made. I think they're made. So I think this is that part.
My intuition is that it's a making of themselves through the, you know, completion of the great work and or an alchemical transmutation of their own individual spirit or something.
It could be partly that, and also, it's, you know, there's an X factor. I don't think it's completely figured out, but they do know that the great secret societies and the great secrets of manifesting, you know, the real higher, well, Melchizedekian or higher order of intelligence, right? You know, which is very much discussed these days,
mm-hmm.
genetics, you know, who will control. This story, right, rises out of this area. And of the two fishes, right, they're called walls. You know, they don't look like walls, but when you see the way Rush has actually worked it out, they're called walls of the ruler.
Uh-huh.
And they define the ability to swing free or get hanged. You know, to use creativity or die by the centurion spear, you know, in your side.
Hmm.
You know, one is grief and fear of death, and the other one is imagination and continuance. Right? So from this area, you got the darkity dark and you got the light. You know, you've got the image of Judas hanging. And you also have the image of the Nazarenes. Right? The Nazarenes were sort of the secret, call that alchemical Zadok priest line,
mm-hmm.
that exists today. It's probably in my blood. But whoever they are, they have a remote control capability to complete this sacred mission.
Amazing.
Right?
Amazing.
So out of this comes that secret.
All right.
That is the one that is supposed to fight the New World Order.
Wow. All right. This is a good place to take a little break, okay?
Sure.
All right. Bruce, amazing.
Thank you.
Everybody, Bruce Raphael. We'll be back with him in just a minute. You can find out information about Bruce on the web. Go over to Kent Stedman's site at cyberspaceorbit.com. There's a link right at the top of the page there over to the Lionsgate webpage. And you can also link, of course, to Bruce's information directly from my site at MikeHagan.com, and you can also listen to our previous radio program that was broadcast on the 23rd of April earlier this year if you want to get a little bit more background on some of this information, okay? All right, we'll be back with Bruce in just a moment. In the meanwhile, we will hear a song here from The New Up, and this one is called, Skylight. And we'll come back with Bruce in just a minute. In the meantime, enjoy yourselves, get a drink of water, grab a beer, have a smoke, whatever you do. And back in about 4 minutes, okay? It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. And a big thank you to Bruce Raphael for sticking around with us. He's live from Beijing, China. And we'll get back with him in just a moment. Thank you. That's called Skylights, the new up on the web, www.thenewup.com. Great music from San Francisco, California. Thanks to my good friend Ben Vaughn over at the Blue Fugue for recognizing that I would like them, because I missed them when they came to town, but he knew that I'd like them, and he grabbed a CD and gave it to me. So thanks to Ben, and thanks to The New Up for making great music. And thanks to Bruce Raphael, our guest from Beijing, China tonight, for sticking around with us and for bringing us a tremendous amount of very, very interesting information. So, Bruce, thanks, and stick around for a little bit longer. How about it?
We're all here.
Yep, we're all here, and from the other side of the world, I don't feel too bad about it. So let me ask you a quick question that came up during the break. You know the image of the dendera that we're actually looking at, the actual zodiac itself?
Yeah.
Where did that image come from? Was that a glyph that was taken off of a wall, or is that something that somebody else put together? Or
In Paris right now, the actual dendera zodiac was taken from the Temple of Hathor and placed there for exhibition.
All right, so there's an actual physical version of what we're looking at here on the web page.
Yeah, in Paris.
Literally, like amazing.
The Masonic kind of world that, Paris is in its own way.
Sure.
Has this very special artifact.
Amazing. Okay, well, I had some people asking about that, so that's very cool.
Mm.
All right.
So when you get to it, you'll see that it looks like
No, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I'm just saying that it is stone relief, basically. When you look at it in its way, it took, I don't know, 100 years or 80 years to make it, I could see why. To lay out all the math and to get each image correct. Well, let's go back to this now. I'm leading up to something that this bestiary kind of world that the Egyptian cosmologists used was a way to understand that, humans themselves are centaur-like. We have to control our feelings, or rather our desires, and as it was into Mosaic law and Islamic law, the need to control desire was prominent. It's just been a prominent thing. Originally, the place of the dragon of desire was, it still is, but it was Scorpio. But Scorpio's original layout included the scales of Libra, right? So it was a very massive star cluster, a cluster of stars, that took into consideration two.
Two dragons.
Somewhere, I guess, I'm not really sure, but I think in the rise of the new in the rise of the Shemsu Or, they must have inspired the early Septuagint of the Old Testament to take into account the fact that the Jews, or the future Jewish race, would also take this into account, and they would split the constellation into two parts. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is the interesting part. To break this down into two parts also showed as sort of a new definition of self-awareness and where they can take a culture. And so from the Chaldeans, which I think allowed this manifestation of the red dragon, to the new pretense of this Egyptian cosmology coming into its own, they split it. Okay? And this is where the child with a rod of iron comes into the picture, who shall rule, the nations. And this deals with time, Of course, Saturn, is still a secondary god, to Uranus. Yet, Saturn always represented a lot when it came to control, form, creating form out of time. And so, the rod, the rod image, of course, is the balance of Libra, right? And in time, as you get to study or read through Rush Allen's site, Salome, he defines this area as a very, very important area for sort of metaphysical encounters that the priests would have with time. And the circumcision, you know, so to speak, of the dragon has taken the scales away out of its claws so it can't control the bounce of the human heart. So from there, we flash ahead, you know, to the year 2007, and what we have is this image. We have the image of Saturn, right? Still Saturn, or like the son of Saturn, if you wish, a child who can rule at Libra. And, you know, if you look at the position of Leo as the little lion, again, the little lion, Abaddon or Apollyon still have the image of rulership, okay? So this image of rulership still deals with quantifying and being sort of almost genetically imprinted within this 2100-year period. So what they're saying is that within each processionary part, which means we're moving from Pisces and Aquarius.
Right, every time we move from one age to another, yeah.
That's right. We sort of return to the Leo Cancer boundary. We return to the processionary, you know, tripwire. We return to honoring our feelings and understanding how much of it is real or how much of it has been disassociated or taken apart or denied. And, you know, so overcoming all this denial and ignorance is part of today's work.
And in a physical sense,
a very,
yeah, I'm sorry. In a physical sense, this is happening tonight, today.
Yeah. Well, this is one chance. Maybe we'll get one more. I don't know. I haven't been able to find any other keys. But, you know, I'd like to put my thoughts to say that the 7-year tribulation, I think, is part of this, because if you read through the story, over those 7 years, we've had plenty of commentary imagery, plenty of storms, Katrina, the tsunami.
Oh my gosh! And I mean,
now,
all over the world.
It's all there.
Even in China, there were
all there.
You know, there's a big hurricane off the coast of China right now. I mean, is it news there? I know there's a big typhoon that's.
Well, it's funny how that happened, and then an earthquake happened. So
right in Japan, that big earthquake in Japan. We got nuclear reactors leaking shit into the ocean.
That's right. So yes. You know, this is a very, very interesting time. I'm not really sure if we should get into that, you know, the seven seals. But I think Rush Allen has carefully found that the seven seals are represented on the Denver Zodiac. I sent you a template of that.
I expect you
to get to it.
I did see it earlier. I didn't look too closely at it.
Right. Well, we could maybe get to that briefly, because it's not on the net and people don't see it. But with the Denver Zodiac in color there, with a Photoshop, you know, I can guide you with the pointer, and we can create the walk of the, it's called the walk away of the seven seals.
Well, let's do that another time, but let's continue.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, you know, it doesn't stop with the beast.
Right.
Like the whole New Testament the Revelations seems to have been there to embody much of these wisdoms and secrets so that they wouldn't die.
Right. You know, Bruce, a listener at the break said his intuition after looking at the Zodiac was that it could be interpreted as a labyrinth, and you would move, you know, from one to the other around this thing.
Oh,
until...
very true. If he only knew, inside Russia's site, there is something called the Path of the False Priest and Path of the True Priest, which I mentioned in the first show.
Yes.
Right? Walking the Path of the True Priest.
Right.
So, he's right. It is there, but it's another elaborate scheme that was the brilliant genius behind this when you start to connect the dots.
That's amazing.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's been an argument, of course, when connecting dots, you know, you create graven images, but I have to emphasize that when the golden fleece, which is sort of the truth of Aries, being the I am, you know, who I am,
yes.
I am, Aries, being nailed to the tree of life, which means portioned in tropical astrology or Roman style astrology, we've been living by that. So therefore, the whole experience, as Rush puts it, is in a Gordon knot. Right? It's like the stresses and strains that are going on in this world is because the lack of cosmological conductivity that's supposed to happen naturally is not happening. And the more this happens, the more the whole culture goes into a consumptive fit, right? And the Egyptians had a term for that called Amamet, right? And Amamet actually is another example of the great red dragon I was telling you of in Revelation. It devours every virgin son as unbalanced desire overwhelms cognition of reality. The death is caused by the consuming heart, which dictates to the inattentive mind a temporal truth that flitters like a feather with no place to land. I quoted from Rush Allen. But that's sort of what we're going through now. The Amamet was like this strange creature of a variety of genetic meld. And it's a funny-looking thing, something like you'd see out of Cartoon Land. And it represented a whole social order being ruled by overwhelming power of consumerism. Which, as you know,
isn't that something
we're
else?
Sort of in now.
My God, what do they say? Nothing new under the sun, huh?
Yeah. So they even covered that, knowing that a whole social order could be steered away from that. But, you know, I don't have the key to that part, but I think I'm working on it. I think we're doing this right here.
I think you're right.
Right now.
I mean, it's a process, obviously. You can't do something until you did what you had to do before it. If
that's
that made
correct.
Any sense.
I mean, I know it's interesting, too, that Ken Stenman talked about the general welfare aspect of a democracy, right? And that has been completely, you know, under the pressure of rational forbearance, you know, where the courts, for whatever their purposes and needs are, rule things in a very sort of imbalanced way.
Mm-hmm.
So our population, or the plebeians, don't get what they really deserve inside a democracy, you know, which is sad because that means it's programmed for self-destruction, leaving room for the next social order.
Right.
You know,
and that's really the bottom line. Is it? I mean, when you treat people like that, when you go about, you know, running a culture, society in that manner, you program it for self-destruction. It's a great way to put it.
Right. That's why when we're still talking about now the little lion going back to the beast. You know, Abaddon, which sort of in syntax terms sounds like a bad Don, right? A bad Don?
Mm-hmm.
Even though Abba is father and Don is father, we're dealing with the role of, actually, on the flip side, the positive side, we're dealing with the role of the father-son relationship, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're dealing with the role of the return of, you know, the Christ energy.
Mm-hmm.
Today marks a distinctive path of the return of the Christ energy, which, just as an aside, to footnote this, everybody, that the sixth seal in the walkway on the disc deals with the reemergence of the, you know, son of God, not the son of man. So today is important because it's supposed to honor what we are, what our inheritance is really about. I guess laid out for us for 2,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is not necessarily a religious experience. It seems to be more of a DNA cosmic kind of experience, which, you know, has its roots in some religious belief. But on the other hand, now the darker side, of course, everybody wants to know about the dark side. Oh, that's exciting. You know, the big problem here is that we can't get to the mount of heaven if the door, or if no one pulls the sword from the stone, which is what, you know, cyberspace orbit's doing, what you're doing. So we are all in the process of getting this double-edged sword of truth into play, right?
Mm-hmm.
The double-edged sword of truth is not using this particular chart now. It actually, which I will, I'll have to use my words, from Geb, which is the sculptor, all the way up to Cepheus, runs the trunk of the tree, basically. And, you know, when Jesus is said to have fought Satan at the top of the tree, or at the top of the tower, that tower was the upper portion of the double-edged sword of truth, right? It's where the king, the head of the king is, right? Cepheus, right? So the point is that in the depths far below, right, this sword enters, passes through Geb, right, through the bottomless pit, into the area near Centaur, right? And Centaur, of course, is like the centurion, and it is the half-man, half-beast character, right, who watches over the river, near the river Chiron, protects the cave of Hades, you know, beneath its lakes, and it's basically a dark area, right? Yet, you know, the point we're making is that we're at this whole aspect of duality, you know, is sort of, you know, Manichaean dualism. It deals with light and darkness, yes, but it also deals with truth, right? So when somebody says, you know, the Star of David was taken and it's become a graven image, well, yes, it has, and there's proof of it. You know, the six-pointed star was used for many, many reasons long before it was
a star of David.
Sure.
So, right? Like so much symbology. I wear this tattoo that's the Cairo that's on my left leg, and people think it's people think
I
it's a Christian symbol. And I'm like, well, you know, they sort of hijacked it, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wish Rush were here. He expounds very well on the whole Cairo and Planet X, you know, PX.
Yeah.
Understanding. Mm-hmm. There are shortcuts, basically, of getting across this vastness of space-time. And because of our knowledge base now, we're getting a feeling of how, for example, Nibiru, you know, the idea of Nibiru is Planet Christ. You know, it's not necessarily something that is supposed to bring up, you know, a dark force, you know, of the, you know, Darth Vader kind of thing. It was never meant to be that. It's sort of it's like a stepping stone down into this world. So it can be considered as like an escalator, a conveyor belt. But we don't need to get into that now.
Right.
I'm not foggy on that, but I do know that when we're talking about Saturn or Satan, and things like that, we are still trying to understand these last 7 years. When you go to the story, please note that, you know, in 2001, the crescent and the star image was seen about 14 days before the same image appeared of an Islamic nature as a cross circle, right? 72 sheaves of wheat, and I think the link is there.
It is. There's an image of it on the website, and people need to take a look at this. This is amazing, actually.
Yeah, you've got to look at that, because that is what Rush perceived in the stars, and then to cosmogenesis and crop circle manifestation. It was, I don't know, anchored? I think the image was anchored. I think that's what crop circles are trying to do. They anchor thought forms. And in this particular case, it was a very strong one from a celestial divine point of view, that the rise of Ishmael, right, the bastard son of Abraham, right, the brother of Isaac, would, and I should say bastard, he's sort of yes, sort of no, but I mean, born from the handmaiden, still gave Ishmael a power genetically to rule a race of people, which he did. And this image of the crescent and the star still rings of, you know, the light, the light, let's just say the light of truth and wisdom. And it's been worked on by many, you know, writers as to whether it is a true dictation of the stars or just a dictation where neophytes, you know, bear down on their knees and follow orders, you know, of Islam, mm-hmm. of Allah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of a different kind of seeking of truth. You know, that's more of an army-esque kind of position. You follow orders. I don't think the Egyptian cosmology was ever based on that, so I don't want anyone ever to think that. But when we see images of the rise of Ishmael riding on a horse, this is, which if you read through that particular link, you'll be pretty amazed that power that came from, you know, the ancient Persian, the ancient Asiatics, is alive and well, and it's going to try to kick butt at this particular time in history. You know, and this is where it gets a little complicated.
How is let's
truth
talk?
Do we
let's
follow?
Can we talk about 9/11? Is it time to talk about that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No.
How does that fit in?
Well, yes, it is interesting that the 9/11 revelations fits into this duality syndrome.
And by 9/11 revelation, you mean the actual chapter and verse of chapter 9, verse 11, et cetera, of the book of Revelation.
It's uncanny. I only learned that a month ago or thereabouts when I was trying to find out where Regulus's reference was in the Bible, and he said it's 9/11. I went, oh my God, that is perfect. That only tells you one thing, that the current New World Order, right, is patterned on what is considered a truthful consciousness of divine intent. That, it's there like honey in a hive. Who's going to take it, right? You've got the upside, you've got the downside. And somehow 9/11 was chosen as a date to memorialize this battle between, call it if you wish, call it between heaven and hell.
Mm-hmm.
Between the lesser demons and whatever. But, I think it still goes down to personal quests. If you're not part of the bigger picture, it doesn't mean you're not part of anything.
Right. I mean, it's always an individual thing in the middle of the big thing.
Right. And I'm not sure, and I think this idea of self-esteem is truthfully lacking in the American mainstream political system.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't mean there's no hope, even though there's a lot of people who write about the 9/11 agenda that it's all been nailed down for the last 200 years. So it's chosen, whoever can figure out how to offset that. Maybe it's, like you said, Islam maybe is there to do its share. And maybe, this new story of out of Japan and China that, the current political powers are being threatened now by, the Asian skull and crossbones men.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
People just want to sort of let each culture rule their own lives without so much, interference economically. But, I'm not really sure how much success that will derive. I don't want to talk about things that are so dark. I think we're talking about right now is to keep people sane. Right.
Yeah, and I mean the whole
insane your fears, insane your condition.
Mm-hmm.
Insane means insulate. Outsane means like if it's bothering you, better talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk more about this about this energy. In other words, the positive side of this is I mean, today is the day that according to at least your calculations, there's a lot of very good energy coming back upon this plane.
Right. When I did this blog at GLP, there were some good astrologers who did provide material. I think Nick Ferentes had some stuff, and some other astrologers.
He's great. He's great.
There because
he does great diagrams and stuff. That guy. So anyway.
Yes, he's a very good. He helps clarify some of that. But in terms of, like I said, the focus of this particular discussion today, we're dealing with how. When people say, honoring the beast or letting the power of the beast, we're trying to discuss this from a much different point of view so that we're not taken. We've become cannibals, we've become consumer cannibals. We've consumed everything, right? We've cannibalized every kind of knowledge base, and now we're pretty mixed up, right? So I'm trying to say today, it's take a time to put down your armor, your mental. Your facilitators, and try to just take a break from this, because if you can do that long enough, you will benefit by uptaking a new source of information that's coming, I think, on a very big celestial level.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's not coming from the satellites,
Right.
It's not coming out of Hollywood. This is something Hollywood never forecasted or imagined. They're not robots.
Mm-hmm.
They're not that kind of thing from Schwarzenegger. We're dealing with something that was meant to honor the human condition. Maybe fleeting, maybe quick, but for those who are prepared, we're all going to benefit. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I won't draw any connection right this moment, but in the aspect of the walk, when you're on our walk through time, we've only imagined a time like this could ever happen. You know, we've talked about it, right? And I think, you know, I really think today feels right. You know, I think people know that they really want to make things better, because we, for us to miss the second coming would be a big joke, because we don't, we only imagine it as it was 2,000 years ago. What if it was not meant to be that way anymore?
Right. In fact, the odds are it would probably be different.
Yeah, so we know the code to all this new form of enlightenment, right, is being tampered with, right? That's the thing we have to be concerned with. And so what can you say, I mean, from all those people you've talked to, and scientists, and other great people of, you know, of cosmic mind source,
mm-hmm.
what kind of contributions would you add to this conversation?
Well, my impression, and it's a personal one too, you know, my own experiences, plus the experiences and information that I gather from talking to, you know, men like you and lots of other men and women, and my intuition is that you're dead spot on. I mean, everybody is saying, in one way or another, in their own particular way, in their own field of endeavor, that we are in the middle. It's not coming. It's not 50 years from now. It's not 500 years in the future. People that are talking, you know, like that, you know, people that project the economy and talk about, you know, well, 100 years from now, the Earth might not have enough oil. I mean, this is silliness. I mean, this stuff is happening right now. And that's my impression, Chris.
That's right. And back to the, you know, firing the grid, you know, that may be as exciting as maybe, you know, the Al Gore concert.
Well, it's PR and hype and propaganda and this sort of thing.
Sure, sure. Well, this has its own version of it, you know, two mm-hmm. people come back from the dead and they're forever thankful and they're trying to send a good message. Okay.
Let me ask you a question about that, though. In other words, the whole live Earth thing that you brought up, it was for the most part economically driven, I'm sure, and I'm sure that the organizers and the people that were behind it were hardly interested in the wonderful benefit to the Earth and mankind. But at the same time, the fact that they did it, I mean, you know, there are a whole lot of other people that are involved, and those other people that may be involved, including people that are, you know, participating as listeners and concert goers and this sort of thing, their intention may have been completely different, and they may have sort of taken advantage of something that was created for them or something.
Well, they could afford it.
Well, that's true, yeah.
The other 90% of, you know, our world population didn't even know it happened, so fine. Now, there's another effort. Maybe it's, you know, maybe it'll be a little bit like, it'll be in Vogue magazine, you know. By the grid. It's a Vogue magazine.
Right.
Okay, great. Right.
Okay, so in other words, that's the Hollywood version, and we're talking about the real one.
Well, yeah, I'm trying to get the record straight today. At least I was on record for pointing it out, that those who have prolonged death, or who are prolonged death recipients and come back, have more than just an out-of-body experience, let me tell you.
Mm.
These people, and for this couple to have been chosen or yanked into, you know, the central stage, they are brought to the dwelling of the eighth king, right? Abaddon is basically the lord of darkness. He's not necessarily a destroyer. He represents Shebalbek in Maya, and in Hindu, it's my favorite word, I forgot his name, but he's sort of the lord of...
Chris? Well, there it goes again, all right? So, we were listening to a really cool song before I had to call Bruce. We're provoking someone. I don't know what's going on, but anyway, it's cool because don't sweat it, because my good friend Ruthie is not coming in 20 minutes. So if we got to stick around with Bruce a little bit longer, we'll do it. And let's hear Skylight again. Actually, I can't believe it, but Bruce just mentioned the word. He actually said the word he said the word tropical. So there's a song with the word tropical in it on this CD. I'll play it, and I'll call Bruce right back, and I'll get you guys back in touch with the rest of this business in a minute. All right, it's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, and check us out on the web at kopn.org. My website, Mike Hagan, HAGAN.com, and you can find information about Bruce at cyberspaceorbit.com, and then just click over to the Lionsgate page that Kent has set up, okay? All right, in the meantime, we'll play a little bit of music and get Bruce right back on the horn here, okay? 89.5 FM, KOPN Columbia. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit. Another song from a great new rock and roll band from San Francisco, California. That one's called Skylight. I thought it was Tropical Soda, but we didn't hear the whole version of Skylight earlier in the program, so I figured I'd play the whole thing there. Anyway, we got Bruce back on the horn here. And if my friend Ruth were coming in at 2 a.m. to do her program, we'd have to rush. But she's not, so we don't. And so we'll just say hello again to Bruce Raphael and say sorry, and we apologize for the technical problems we've been having, but I'm glad we were able to get you back, Bruce.
Thank you. I'm sure some of the listeners have gone to bed, but anyone who's still up, there's some interesting points to raise on the Denver Zodiac. So as a time signet, one could recall that any date selected there in the white writing, if you subtract a full half a galactic year of 13,000 some odd years, you will find a position in time of importance also. Not really important at this point. I just wanted to bring it to light that the Leo and Aquarian sort of Sphinx concept, which you know is aligned to that for the last 10,000 years, we are dealing with a couple of images here in the Zodiac which are not in perfect order, you know, but they're there. Now, for example, I just wanted to draw attention to minus 561, right? The ruler of Iraq.
Yeah, Nebuchadnezzar, right?
And if you take the date of 2006, the hanging of the last ruler of Iraq, which was
who actually fancied himself as a reincarnation of Nebuchadnezzar, as a matter of fact.
Well, someone must have told him about this because it's an uncanny, spot-on count. And the number, right, the number, the value of 2,600 and some odd years is a harmonic value of the galactic year, right? The
full galactic 26,000,
year. Yeah. You divide, right. And when you divide that by 360, right, you get your 71 and a half, 72 value, which is, if you're familiar, a radial value for this, we'll say, the celestial ring that is overhead. It's our, you know, in terms of scientifically, you know, you've got your celestial pole. Got your galactic pole, you know, CP, GP, right? And the point of 72 portions of the circle of time, right, gives a sort of accurate count of motion. And the same term, though, it's actually, I'm not too sure if I'm going to pronounce it right, but in the Quran, the 72 virgins are actually defined as angels. Somehow or another, someone messed it up in the translation. But
go figure.
The name of virgin actually is supposed to be angels. So when they mention the angel crop circle, and you count it, and it's very accurate, it's got 72 sheaves, 72 lines. It's quite complementary to the fact that it is part of the processionary count. And at this particular time, at the crossroads we are today, you know, the epitome, you know, of still the Word of God, the Word of Muhammad, has to finish up the time. You know, all other religions had their time. I mean, isn't it funny? I don't think people really knew about Islam until 9/11. How can you have a whole world religion sitting in the shadows for thousands of years?
I know you knew it existed over here, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, the Denver Zodiac was sure Shiola to let everybody know that after 2006, when you hit this next count, it's going to be a real thrust in our gut, a wake up call, and we better be ready. So, you know, don't have to listen to GLP doom and gloomers. It's written here, and it was written here thousands of years ago, you know, in stone. So, how do they know? I guess it's all part of the human genetic experience. You know, it comes out with a couple of variations. We have technology, and we still have, you know, DNA manipulation, which is still part of that Anunnaki, you know, duality thing, right? So we're at a stage now, after these many hours of discussion, right, that for those who have been actually down in the cave of Hades, you know, spending these last few years wondering what their souls are worth, it's time to drag this thing out and bring it back into the light, and you will be greeted, you know, very warmly by Mother Earth. You know, in the story, Persephone is greeted by her mother at the cave waiting for her return. So, you know, the Greek version of the story obviously pronounces, you know, the two solstices, you know, going, you know, what goes on in the winter in the southern hemisphere, what goes on in the northern hemisphere in the summer. You know, it's sort of the same. And in between, you know, the ancient even pagan rituals used winter solstice as a turning point to bring light back into day.
Right.
So when I mentioned in there briefly that Regulus was an important star seen in the winter solstice position, you know, it would basically tell everybody that wherever they knew it was to be would signify the return of light and, you know, everything would be nice and normal again. But in the more dog days of war here, we're trying to save souls here. We're trying to get people not to feel fear. You know, we're trying to understand the fact that the need to have some sort of clarion call, right, a messenger, is why there is this Fire the Grid experience, you know. She's sort of a Joan of Arc kind of character, right? And she will go as far as she can, you know, and hopefully have some success. You know, I'm not completely sure how much of it is orchestrated, but I would think she has every right to succeed in her mission, right? I don't think that while she was down in the areas of darkness that, you know, she would be coming back into the light and, you know, met by the reptilian energies or, you know, greeted by, you know, the darkest demons of hell. I don't think that. I don't see any evidence of it, you know. I think from listening to her story, you know, she was like a real Persephone type of girl.
Bruce, I don't even think we gave the details. Real quick, tell people what this whole business is about, this woman and Fire the Grid. We haven't talked about it.
Has
we
no
mentioned
clue
the name
about that, which is
go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, in Nova Scotia, a woman and her son, a few years back, you know, I wrote it down somewhere, I think it's 2000.
Yeah, it's like 2004, I think.
Four?
Maybe.
Yeah. And around noon or so, she was driving, and it was this huge flash flood, took her car down into the creek like you saw in, you know, iRobot, you know, the movie. And the only people who got to save her, though it was late, were people who were just local heroes, right? And they dragged the car up with the help of a machine crane operator, and basically with some life resuscitation. I'm not sure. I think she was taken to the hospital to resuscitate, and then her son as well, but he stayed in a state of, I don't know what the doctors would call it, but it was definitely, he was dead, but for somehow, on some reason, this, and they all testified that her inane behavior, her need to protect the son as if she could bring him back from the dead, is all what the story about miracles, right? When you think about it, this is all we're dealing right now in this particular tale, is that there were a bunch of people who, you know, didn't see anything, but they were, I guess because it's a Nova Scotia, I mean, if it was in New York City, they'd pull the plug. They can't afford to keep this thing going. But they let the story go, and they brought this child back from the dead, okay? And the mother was there, and so forth and so on. So, you know, it's in the hospital record. It's nothing they made up. It's just that it's just one of those things about this particular, now it wasn't July 17th, by the way, it didn't happen in July. It's just, you know, she and her son return with a new message of hope and resource into the power of miracles, showing that the interpenetration of life into the infinite way does exist, right? So, with all those conditions, and you're listening to her talk, and you look at her style, you know, she's very, very sort of a normal person, I think.
And you, hey Bruce,
join.
You believe it's a legit story?
Well, I do, only because I got lucky on the net. How lucky can I get? I met somebody who was from that neighborhood, who was there at the time, and followed the story. Right? Gave me the article, the hospital name. I have only the date, the time, all that stuff. So Rush and I are doing a cosmogenesis on it. And we're sure can be that, you know, there's got to be some discussion of the Cave of Hades and Persephone's story.
Mm.
And if it is, it'll be a very bona fide celebration, you know, that all this stuff is not, you know, staged by some, artist. This is real cosmic stuff.
Wow. And this is amazing because this is the Persephone and the serpent is the story we're talking about, right? And like
Persephone and the serpent?
Isn't that the mythological tale of Persephone?
No. God of the underworld.
Well, Persephone is a daughter of one of the goddesses. And she likes to go off on her own, take the powers, and she did in front of a cave and was approached by Hades himself in the form of a great prince. And he seduces her and takes her away for like 6 months. And in her absence, of course, there's great grief and sadness. But she returns. I think whatever he's offering is not good enough. So he comes back. And, you know, that's a lousy version of it, actually. But
okay.
That's sort of the story.
Right.
Okay? No snakes. No snakes in this one.
Okay.
So, but I will actually go back online and learn my Greek myth a little better. But it's basically that.
Mm-hmm. No, that's cool.
It's basically that.
All right.
And the fact that there is her son, you know, the boy, forget it, the boy also is Persephone, you know.
Mm.
And the boy comes back after being dead even longer, greeted by her mother.
How long was he dead?
He said 4 days. Well, I mean, this is the weird part. If he's dead, he's dead. I mean, they said that it was, you know, like out of the X-Files.
Right.
But she set up this, like, strange behavior of having friends come by and touch and do all this spiritual healing, and they had a whole group of, you know, this is Nova Scotia.
Right.
This is quite off the, you know, the far east of the shelf, so who knows what they do out there.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's true. I mean, it's really true. I mean, who knows what people do wherever they are.
Well, yeah, there's that, but also the fact that who would have known that this was going to turn into a big,
mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm,
star-studded website event. And I could say, you know, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. This is a very important time where higher celestial intelligence are supposed to, you know, congregate and communicate good things. So, you know, while people are sleeping now and they're sort of tired and they can't keep listening to the show, you know, I am still, even under some of the fatigue of my vocal cords, I'm still sending out the same message.
Mm-hmm.
That to, you know, to honor the wisdom and the truth set into stone 2,000, you know, some odd years ago, was no accident for it to return today.
Amazing.
And, you know, we're dealing with a communion. You know, this is the sort of interesting thing about this beast idea. You know, honoring the whole beast thing deals with, as Rush was saying, this vision and version of cannibalization. Did you read the story about the new map of the Milky Way shows our galaxy to be a cannibal? You know.
Yeah, it's munching on another smaller dwarf galaxy.
Ah, now, here's Rush's words. These words simply show that our modern material science is lost in a cosmic gutter, with no capacity to appreciate that life exists for the sake of communion. These great houses of wisdom became sacred restaurants. Where the ancients have always feasted on the manna from heaven.
Mm.
Okay? So now in this new world order of the 21st century, it has failed to orient cosmic knowledge keeping to what was pure cosmic intent for the community union, which is communion.
Communion?
Right?
Yeah. It's stuck on the consumption side.
Sort of. Now, eating the body of Christ, you know, I have a great story of that, you know, being of the Jewish persuasion, you know, pure. I had to go to this huge, huge conference in Providence, Rhode Island years ago. There were 50,000 people there, you know. They were all, I guess, of the ones that speak in tongues, what are they called again? I forgot. But them and other, you know, modern, Christian experiment. I'm sorry, I'm a little ignorant at this hour. I can't find the words.
No,
but
it's okay.
Literally 50,000 people who want to talk about and be led by, you know, a supreme reverend who talked about Shekinah glory, like it were a huge 747, I remember, you know. And they pass around, you know, multi-thousands of these little wafers, right, to partake in the communion of Christ, right? There's 50,000 people there. They're all talking in tongues and singing, and it's supposed to be a great event. Would you believe this? You know, because I was honest. I'm probably the only Jew there out of 50. I had to have been. And this woman comes up with the communion wafer, right? And says, you are about to take the body of Christ. Have you been baptized? And I said, no, I'm a Jew. And they said, you can't have this. Now, how do you think I felt?
Thanks a lot.
No cookies.
No cookie for you.
I couldn't believe it. I was shocked. You know, you are depriving me of the fruit of the Christ energy. You know, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
Of course, back then I was only 17.
Right.
But I still felt I knew what I did, and I couldn't believe it. I felt hurt. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Well, I'm sure.
I felt hurt. So
I'm sure.
50,000, I should have just laughed in their face. Right?
Yeah.
But I didn't turn over the cart. I was just completely, I wasn't aware that was a test question. And
Bruce,
afterwards, as a... Yeah.
Bruce, let me do a quick ID here. KOPN Columbia, sure. 89.5 FM. We're 2 a.m. in the morning, and we're going to keep Bruce Raphael for a little while longer, I think. If he'll capitulate.
I'm still here.
Okay, good.
All I was saying is that we're dealing now with the aspect of the communion.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, it's just another turn of a phrase, but, you know, we are dealing with overconsumption. And we are dealing with the fact that the original communion, at least as issued through the Vatican and through the Catholic religion, had something to do with honoring this very cosmic and spiritual experience, right? I'm not a spokesman for this. I mean, I would love to hear somebody or get a reference that, you know, I'll ask Rush. He's Catholic, you know. He's a universalist, of the universalist church sort of thing, so he knows all about it. But it was only recently that we talked about how this idea of cannibalism is strange. I said, why would you eat the body of Christ? You know, I'm a naive, you know, young 17-year-old going, no problem, I'll give it a go.
Sure.
You know, I mean,
I
must have been eating everything else at the time. form, right? So what's wrong with this? You know, I thought it would work. And for the first time, something so powerful was like, nope, you can't have it. No soup for you. And I couldn't believe it. So there you go. It was sort of like a strange form of the New World Order coming to me at a very young age. So I didn't get it. But now, when we're talking about it, it's a very symbolic story, you know, wanting communion then, but now we're involved in a different kind of communion. You know, we're communion of spirit. We don't merely necessarily have to go through that. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, if we don't take the communion of Christ in the church, you know, are we damned? I mean, what does this mean? We don't believe in Christ or whatever.
Right.
What about everyone else?
Mm-hmm. Right. Those who weren't, you didn't even have the opportunity. Right. Bruce,
so
let me ask you something here, and tell me if this is not, you know, if it's not something you want to talk about right now. But
I'm
cruising through the article again, and I recognize. Yeah. I remember that. The appearance of Regulus somewhere around 3200 BC was significant. And I know that that's also right about the same time as the Mayan calendar
calendar
rollover.
Very good.
Is 2012 and all this business connected to all this?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Personally, I'm not an expert on trying to, you know, create divination for time calendars for 2012. I'm still sort of more on the space.com side of, you know, McCanny and all those people who don't really use to. But I think the 2012 count, my theory, I think you've heard it on before, is that this year, 2007?
Right,
this
is essentially 2012. Right.
Yeah, I think this is it. And everything after that is fluff. Because, I mean, really, for all this particular time, no matter how bad things get, it's not a gradient of things really got bad. If you're half attuned, you might as well just go and follow the path to light and not worry about how bad things can get on Earth, because we can only imagine, you know? you know, you can have a group of people sit like lemmings sitting on the edge of the cliff, being ready to be pushed in. They're so scared. Forget it. Not important.
Right, right.
But what is interesting is that in real calendar keeping, 3116, 3760 thereabouts, were two calendrical segments. One was an Egyptian one around 3700, and the 3116 was, they call it sort of the Hebrew or the early Hebrew calendar count, which aligned itself with many other cultures.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When asked, I wish I had, you know, Rush has it in file, but if ever he was on the show and organized some plates, his understanding is phenomenal. Oh my God. When you look at what they saw for calendar count, it usually was Ophiuchus, you know, the interloper, the 13th constellation, whatever you want to call him.
Mm-hmm.
He's the white horseman of the apocalypse, the pale rider. No, right, not the white horseman, the pale rider.
Right, right.
And he is seen on the zenith on that date, and probably in the autumn, October, with his two sickle-like serpent kind of design things hanging off his hands. And at the end of it is Antinous, which is the story of the birth of, you know, the Jupiter Etana child, Christ-like person to come back into the world. So they must have used this as a calendar or as a counting mechanism, plus some other things which I can't recall offhand. But I remember the time I saw that for that calendar, Ophiuchus and his staves, his serpent-like staves or sickles, whatever, were on the zenith, which is the alignment above, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that same image was the one in the year 2000, okay, July 17th.
Amazing.
It's in the story. If you go there,
scroll down,
there's two pictures, you know, for the lunar eclipse on that time. There's the Gemini thing, which deals with thinking, right? And then there is the, actually, if you go, let me go with that. I'll bring it up and add some words to it. But this is pretty important because you're looking at a, you know, when you say the Christ child, you're talking about, Jesus Christ, and go, no, we're talking about the Christ child, you know, the energy that is manifesting today,
mm-hmm.
7 years later.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there's the two panels. I'm looking at them now. You've got, I can't blow this thing up in this way, but I've got the zenith going through the male, you know, cast of Gemini.
Okay.
Sun is in Gemini. See? And that was at a certain hour, and then a few minutes later, at midnight, you have the image of Antinous, who is the Christ child, riding the wings of the eagle, you know, sailing through, riding through the Milky Way, right? And you also have the moon, you have a lunar eclipse occurring at the same time, okay? The lunar eclipse is occurring very close to the gateway of the gods. Can you see that that little picture, you know, of the man that looks like he has a bow and arrow?
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Archer?
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Located within the blue line.
Yeah.
Right? That really tells us that's quite significant. Mm-hmm. Right? That there we're looking at, you know, Sagittarius deals with the IC, you know, the IC, having that sort of enlightened thing,
mm-hmm.
right? Sagittarius and the archer, however, is also an Ishmael image, right? So it still deals with the rise of Islam, right? Or the spirit in its best form, if you want to look at it that way, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And a message is going to be brought through this mechanism, right?
Mm-hmm.
That image grows, meaning over the next few years, you keep seeing this over and over again. The comets swirl around Sagittarius, you know, and there's more of this explained through Rush's, you know, powerful assessment
of
how this continually refers to Ishmael.
You know, Bruce, we should do another show and get Rush on the air with us.
Really?
I think so.
Do you think he'd be willing to do it, maybe?
I think so.
Why don't you ask him?
Sure, I would love. I mean, because he's really, you know, he's the master of this stuff, and he certainly, of course, he's a little bit too advanced. You know, I could speak simple terms and
talk. Right. That's why I want both of you.
But if he can do this, if he can do that, it'd be great. But to have us both on would be good because he can clarify with his engineering skills because he's also a master engineer and an astrophysicist, and he works in all kinds of incredible areas of industry. You know, he's one of those kind of Toth, you know, kind of characters. you know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. It's a total a master of many trades, yes.
That's right. And he speaks really good, too. I really enjoy the way he speaks. And of course, you know, I would like to see him on the air, but, you know, you're not running an education system here. It'd be great if we can get his book published as well.
Right,
the whole goal is. But his online huge websites have kept up with all his cosmogenesis connections and his experiences, and they're very, very, very well written. They're just a little bit too advanced, even for me sometimes.
And that's Siloam, right? I think it's his website, Siloam.
Yeah,
Siloam.net.
Right, Siloam.net. Siloam, just for now, it deals with where we're talking about the area of the beast, right? It deals with cognitive understanding of reincarnation. If you just go, just quickly, this is very important, actually, why he chose Siloam. If you go back to the Dendera Zodiac, and you look at number 22, right?
Okay, where's that exactly?
Number 20, I think it's number 20.
That's straight up
that
midnight,
actually
almost.
That's right. It's located... Remember we were talking about Nebuchadnezzar's kingship of Iraq?
Mm-hmm.
Well, how interesting. You know, 13,000 years prior...
Oh, completely opposite, on the other side of the calendar, okay.
Right. It passes through the head of the whale. Right? Now, just so you know, when Jonas, anything that deals with whales, right?
Uh-huh.
Not the Leviathan, that's the serpent. But when you're dealing with the behemoth... Right, the thrashes and this and that.
Yeah.
And you deal with Jonas and the whale.
Uh-huh.
Or you deal with Job. Remember?
Yes.
Job jumps overboard.
Uh-huh.
Before he gets to, right? This is all in the image of Thetis, right, which is the whale. But what's interesting here,
where's the whale in the Dendera?
What you do is look for number 20, if you have the thing there. Number 20... says 2020 says it's the Cetus, yeah, massive physical strength. That's the way it's coded.
Mm-hmm.
So we were talking about the beast, you know, the location earlier of the two lines of Pisces, you know, the world tree. But actually, it's interesting. They took it to another level and they physically put Cetus, the whale, sort of combined with the head of a goat. What is that character? Yeah, goat.
Yeah.
So Cetus becomes like an image of Capricorn, which is abundance,
okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So when you are captivated by the extreme power available to the gods, you know, this area was called the chief way of the gods. And this is where you're bestowed reincarnative powers and understanding about life, you know, mm-hmm. forces of life. And to do that, you have to have abundance. You know, you have to have gifts of intelligence and money and, you know, cosmic viability and all that.
Right.
That area was the mystery.
Interesting.
Mystery zone. So I want to point out that here in the Dendera Zodiac, that actually is physically written. When I pointed it out earlier between the two beasts, or the beast of 666, right, 666 years,
mm-hmm.
it's something that Rush and I said, it's a very subtle, more advanced notation that where they have Pisces connected to the stave of the beast, you know, the number 39.
Yes.
In the stars, that's actually Capricorn, right? But like everything in this, you know, mystery of design, there's a reason why they made it more clear, you know. Only Rush could describe that at the moment.
It's amazing.
More advanced for me, but I understand, right? You understand?
Yeah, I do, and it's remarkable.
Right?
All right,
but it's again, yeah.
No. I'll let you finish, and I want to ask you one last question here.
Sure. So, basically, giving power to the beast. Right? This is the whole thing today. We have to understand that part of the beast experience is, you know, we're dealing with our genetic emotional cognition. Sort of a weird way of putting it. We have to have cognitive power about our feelings to move on.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's all about. Right?
So
there's a lot more self-control.
As individuals, for people listening to the program, for people who hear it, maybe they hear it after the fact. Maybe they hear it on the 19th or the 20th or whatever. Two questions, actually. The first one is the obvious one. What should people be doing? In other words, is there a personal action that people can take, to take advantage of this? Meditate, pray, whatever. The other question, and I think it's maybe a more significant one, or at least to me it is, the question is there a partner involved? In other words, do we have to do something? In other words, we have to attain a certain level or make it to a certain place of cognition or consciousness or something like that. But is somebody else or something else involved in something else involved as well? In other words, do we have to make it to the door, but the handle is on the other side of the door?
Mm-hmm.
Is it something like that that's going on?
Well, I think we're greeted. I think just to let everybody know, this is not something that lasts just, you know, like a dwindling candle and it burns out. You still have a chance, even though you may have been unaware of this at all.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe that this image, this story will carry on all over the world and eventually have more support because people will have stories to back it up.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. I mean, I think people should be aware that they can be more careful to choose their words when they want to say something, right? So that's not to hurt other people's feelings, but to be truthful. That alone is part of the message, right? And maybe that'll help preserve some of our cultural mores, and it will help preserve this self-esteem, which I think a lot of us may have lost if we don't have a job we like, or we're not making enough money, or we don't have a good enough partner, or, you know, it never should be about good enough. It should be about keeping your feet firmly planted on holy ground.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and not using your head for everything.
Right.
When you talk to people, you'll know. You'll know if they've got connected today or not.
Huh.
Right?
Through the heart.
I think so. I think that's why Regulus is a regulator of this experience, and it's through the heart chakra.
Amazing.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you. I haven't had a chance to speak this way for this long. And, you're a good listener. You were a good listener. And, I look forward to hearing any feedback. You could always direct them to any emails.
Oh,
yeah. Or, of course, we'll just look forward to listening to it again, you know, when it gets an MP3 form, and seeing really what message was delivered today.
Yeah, I think we should do that. We'll get this up on the web. We'll listen back to it. I will. I know you will. And then we'll plan our next program, and we'll try to clarify further. Okay?
Yeah, like I said, when someone listens to it again, I'll be interested to hear what they heard. You know.
Yeah, and I'm the same way. It's really funny because sometimes when I do the show, like I hear my own words in one way, and other people hear them differently, and I also hear the words of my guests in one way, and listeners hear it in different ways. So I get all kinds of email and correspondence that is often, you know, as enlightening as the program itself. So when I get that stuff, I'll be sure that I forward it to you, and we'll take a look at it and then use that to formulate the next step. Okay.
Excellent. Okay. Well, let's close it with, you know, these parting words that all of us are connected, really in ways that bring our hearts together on a pattern that is based on what we were supposed to be taught when we were born. You know, that love will always steer us through the stars. And, this is the way we're going to go.
All right. Well, I'm all with you, Bruce. All right.
Okay. Great talking to you. And, like I said, in the weeks to come, try to squeeze in some of the, you know, extra words and stuff that came through in those emails. And just to, you know, I know you look over your shoulder on a break and look at these words and such, but see what you make of it.
I'll do it, Bruce. Okay. Yeah, my
word.
Don't
be a stranger. Email me now and again.
I will. I'll talk to you soon, okay?
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Bruce. Wonderful stuff, everybody. One more time, a big thank you to Bruce Raphael, live this evening from Beijing, China. The guy's been running all around the world for the last 12, 15, 20 years, chasing down all kinds of obscure, interesting, and relevant clues and, evidence and archaeological finds, all kinds of stuff that Bruce has brought together to share with us tonight. And it's all coming together in the work that he's, talking about right here, the Lionsgate cosmology. And it is something that we're in the middle of. It's going to continue, and we're going to stay in touch with Bruce and follow up with all of this stuff in the future, okay? All right, it's about 20 after 2, pushed a little bit further than we normally do, but it was well worth it, and we'll finish things off here with another piece of music from the new Up. I think the song is called Ellipsis, and we'll play that, and then we'll get on out of here, okay? It's KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My name is Mike Hagan. You've been listening to Radio Orbit for the last 3.5 hours. We'll come back next week, have the amazing Marco Roden. And Marco's been on the show a couple times before, and he's amazing, too. And we'll talk about mathematics and energy and, believe it or not, some things that are related exactly in weird ways to what Bruce has been talking about tonight. As Bruce said, it is all connected. And we'll continue the thread next week, okay? Thank you so much, for everybody, for listening, and it's been a pleasure, as always. One more time, a big thank you to Bruce Raphael. Make sure you hop on the web, go over to my site or to Kent Stedman's site, and take a good close look at the stuff that Bruce has been presenting to us tonight. You can download all this stuff and take time in your own room or your own kitchen when nobody else is around to actually sort of dig into it. But it is worthwhile, and we'll continue to follow up on it in the future, okay? All right, one more time, it's Mike, Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. Thanks one more time to Bruce and to everybody else for listening. We'll come back to you next week. Have a great week between now and then, okay? Take care.
Wearing our illusions like elliptical protrusions.